previously on the Steve Cochran Show.
It's got to be quite something to be a part of a Blackhawks Thanksgiving on the road. Who's the biggest eater on the team? Who could kill the entire turkey?
I usually come in there when they're almost all done, and I'm the cleanup crew. So
I'm thinking 25 plus 20, you're probably traveling. You got to be traveling 35, 40 guys. You know, with
minimum.
Yeah, with minimum. So let's say it's 50. Let's just round it off at 50 with the administration. That's a lot of turkey and potatoes, my friend.
Absolutely. I wonder what the over and under. I'm going to have to ask Tony there. What's the over and under on turkeys?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Good morning and happy Monday, 510 720 WGN. Happy Cyber Monday, I should say, and happy day after a long Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you guys all had a great holiday weekend. It's the Steve Cochran Show. I'm Andrea Darlis. Dave Ennett's here. Mary Vandeveld in traffic. Vic Vaughn in the newsroom. Nick DiGilio is going to talk some movies with us after 5:30, and Kevin and Ross producing the program. Orion Samuelson in studio with us as well. Big weekend, not just because of a Thanksgiving. Going to talk about some of the protests that occurred on Friday and Saturday as well. Monday, today, classes at the University of Chicago, as Vic said in the news, have been canceled. All activities planned for the Hyde Park campus are also canceled after FBI counterterrorism officials informed the university of a gun violence threat to the campus. The university president sent an email out to the students and the staff warning of a threat posted online by an unknown individual that specifically mentioned the campus quad this morning. So the president, President Zimmer, asked the staff and faculty members who don't have emergency duties or patient care responsibilities to just stay either in their dorms or their homes and not come to the Hyde Park campus today. Again, this is a precaution. There was a threat made. The FBI is investigating. Students who are on campus are being told to contact their RAs or the head of the residence halls, and to, again, stay indoors as much as possible if they are on the campus today. One UFC student described the quad as very busy on Monday morning, said that a lot of the students were coming back yesterday from the Thanksgiving holiday, and they were stunned to learn of the threat via email and the text from the university. So just as a precaution today, all classes and all activities at the University of Chicago canceled today. All right. Also, Black Friday, as many of you know, we're going to talk to Scott Goldberg after Mary's traffic and find out if Black Friday was kind of a bust for retail stores. I think all indications are that it was. Black Friday shoppers, if you were out and about along Michigan Avenue, you saw the protests. They were big. They were loud. A friend of mine, I was not down here. I was actually in the suburbs doing some Black Friday shopping, and a friend of mine was down here and said, you know what, she was with her daughter and tried to use it as a teaching moment. Gary McCarthy, the police department, very, very, very heavy police presence all through the holiday weekend. You saw many officers on bikes, the mounted patrol, and also standing on the street corners as well, kind of watching over things. Superintendent Gary McCarthy holding a news conference over the weekend, talking to reporters, saying basically the mayor's got his back.
The mayor has made it very clear that he has my back. And if people peel away the onion on what's happening right now in the policing world, you're going to find a police department that's doing an exceptional job. And quite frankly, I'm not going to quit on the people of Chicago.
Now, these protests started last Tuesday, of course, after the dash cam video of police officer Jason Van Dyke shooting Laquan McDonald after that dash cam video was made public. There were some protests on Tuesday. They got a little more unruly on Wednesday. This was ridiculous. I don't know why the protesters were trying to take the lights off the Christmas tree in Millennium Park, but that speaks for itself. Chicago police officers attempted a Black Friday blackout. They were trying to bring a halt, the protesters rather, were trying to bring a blackout to bring a stop to commerce on the busiest shopping day of the year. I don't think it really affected shopping. It just drew a lot of stares and drew a lot of attention, which was their point as well. Incidentally, Officer Jason Van Dyke, who we were talking about too, is going to be in bond court again today. The judge is holding him without bond in this case, because the judge had not, as of that point, seen the dash cam video. So the judge was going to, again, look at the video over the weekend, and we'll find out today whether Officer Jason Van Dyke will get bond or will be allowed to post bond. So he'll be at the Cook County Courthouse for his second hearing today. All right, it's coming up on 5:15. Scott Goldberg's going to join us after Mary's Traffic to talk a little bit about Black Friday. And as I said, whether or not it was a bust, I kind of think it was for a lot of retailers. Politics in the 7 o'clock hour as well. Pat Brady's going to be with us. Dan Hampton as well. And Jeb Bush later on in the program. Right now, 5:15. Let's get a check of traffic for you. And here's Mary. Five 20 in the morning, 7:20 WGN. I'm going to talk to Scott Goldberg in just a second here. Jeb Bush, Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush, will be on the program at 8 o'clock today after the 8 o'clock news. So we're looking forward to that as well. Did a little Black Friday shopping. I don't know if I should ask any of you guys if anyone did any Black Friday shopping. I know the answer would be no from Dave.
No from me.
No from Orion. No from Nick. And probably
Kevin.
Mary, did you do Black Friday shopping?
I did.
Really?
Yeah, but I was in northern Wisconsin.
With nothing open, right?
No, actually, there were little stores open in Ashland, and it wasn't too bad. Weren't too many. Got a few good deals.
You were one of the few, as was I. More Americans apparently shopped online than at stores over the Black Friday weekend. We joined Scott Goldberg. Morning, Scott.
Good morning. How are you?
How about that? More American shopping online on Friday as opposed to, today that's going to just far surpass that, but then actually going to the stores on Black Friday.
Yeah, it's interesting. The firm ShopperTrack that looks at this says that Black Friday spending was $10.4 billion this year, down from $11.6 last year. So these are the kind of numbers that would make people freak out about the economy, about the state of the country in general in years past. But there was such a massive increase. Online sales were up 14% compared to last year that you're just seeing a shift in these habits. So people are still in a buying mood, a shopping mood this time of year, but the way they're going about it is much different.
See, I love to shop. I love to buy. And I used to go every Friday, every Black Friday, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't wait in the line, but I would go and get some of the deals. And a lot of what I was hearing this year, Scott, from different people, either who I was with or at the store, saying it's a lot of the same merchandise,
right?
Only the prices are higher.
Right. Well, and people and retailers know that. They've been going after people with online deals. They also know that because we've been migrating, not just from brick and mortar stores to online retailing. We've also been changing the way we shop online. We're using smartphones now, which basically means we can go online shopping no matter where we are. We don't have to sit in front of a computer. Because they know we've been migrating in that direction, they've been changing the sales. They don't require you to bust down the doors to get the deal on the TV or anything else anymore. And you don't have to do it on Black Friday weekend or today on Cyber Monday or whatever, Turkey Tuesday is going to be tomorrow. You can shop through this whole season, and they are going to give you deals no matter where you look. So it's really turning into a matter of convenience for shoppers.
Yeah, absolutely. Best Buy, Walmart, Target were among the many retailers trotting out the Black Friday deals early on Thursday morning. And as you say, many of the stores now are having Black Friday month or week. A lot of the sales, I got some of these text and email alerts too saying, hey, you know what? Our Black Friday sale is going to go till next Black Friday. So there's more opportunities to do it too.
Yeah, and they still take advantage of the marketing. Like, there will be a lot of Cyber Monday deals. If you look at basically any retail site today, the first thing you might see on the screen is a pop-up that says enter this code and get a certain percentage off your purchase. So for marketing purposes, they will still throw out terms like Black Friday and Cyber Monday, but the reality is the deals last for a month. So if you missed out, you're fine. You've got a lot of shopping to look forward to.
So Cyber Monday today, a lot of people are going to be online shopping. Not at work, of course. They're going to wait till they get home and do all the online shopping.
Cyber Monday got this name because people used to have to wait until they got to work to take advantage of a faster internet connection. Exactly. That's not the case anymore.
Not so much. What can we look for today? Obviously, free shipping, certain deals that are really going to stand out.
Yeah. Look, like I mentioned, you go to any website and you're going to see something that pops up. I think you should make a list of the things you want, and then you go to that retailer's website, or a lot of retailers have their own apps, and through the apps you might be able to take advantage of certain purchases. There are some websites too. There's one called Camel that has a price tracking feature, so it'll tell you when the best deals are coming if it's not today. So it's really everywhere. I don't think you can lose. I wouldn't necessarily recommend any one deal over another, because like I said, you go shopping, you're going to see somebody trying to give you 15, 35, whatever percent off.
Yeah, and there's a cool app that I discovered over the weekend. Is it Parabus? And what you do is you download the app and say you purchase something, say at Target or wherever it was, and that it keeps a copy of your receipt in your email, and then they go into your email. You have to obviously let them into your email records and your receipts, and they say, you know what, you could have gotten this deal cheaper at Kohl's or fill in the blank at, you know, XYZ retailer, and then they try and get you a refund.
Wow.
They take
Does
a percentage, of course, yeah. I don't know. I haven't tried it yet. I've downloaded it, so I'll let you know if it works, because I did some online shopping last week.
There's another one, Retail Me Not, that has an app. You might have heard of the website, but they will let you in on all the coupon codes you need on different websites to take advantage of the deal. So, I mean, it's really, you could spend as much time shopping for apps to help you out as actual purchases you're going to make.
I'm writing all these down, too, Scott, by the way.
Good.
All right, have fun. Get some good shopping done today, and we'll check in with you later in the week.
Sounds great. Talk
all
to you
right.
soon.
You bet. That's ABC's Scott Goldberg. You can follow him on Twitter as well.
As we continue from the Allstate Showcase studio, I want to give Andre an assignment. And Mary, you can jump in on this as well, but I think this could help the listeners. Now, I know this is not an area of expertise for you in particular.
Does this have to do with shopping?
Shopping at work.
All right.
I know this
All
is
right.
not something you enjoy.
All right. Hold on.
Okay.
So what's the assignment now?
The assignment is, each hour, I'd like you and Mary to come up with something that you'll suggest to the listeners is, here's a great cyber shopping place you can go, either a website, maybe a deal that you would recommend for them, because you could save them time at work and maybe keep them from getting fired.
For example, like if a $178 cashmere sweater is down to $39.
Yeah.
I could tell them where to find that.
Yeah, if you knew where that was.
Yeah. I mean, if it just happened to be on Carsons.com.
All right. Okay.
Or,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. And again, I don't want to put pressure on you because I know you're not skilled or comfortable in the cyber shopping area. But in this case, I hope you'll make an exception.
Well, you know, we're used to investigative reporting, so I could just turn this into an investigative report.
Right.
For the service of you and the rest of the listeners.
Right, right. I had a problem cyber shopping over the weekend. Jesse
pretty?
Jackson was standing in front of my computer and he wouldn't let me get to the keyboard.
Whatever did you do?
Yeah, I just gave him a head fake. It's almost 5:45. Dave, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Get a little sun.
No, I didn't. Really.
Yeah, you did.
No, I really didn't.
Did you tape the games and just go out and frolic?
No, I have not been. Maybe I got a little windburned on Saturday.
Okay, maybe that was it.
Yeah.
And always good to see Big O, though. I think he's a fool. I would have stayed in the desert if I were you.
Yeah, when I got off the plane yesterday, I thought, maybe this wasn't the best idea.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy being with you.
Well, that's nice of you to say. Yeah. Kind of ruined my moment there, didn't you, with your niceness? Being a better person and all that. David is in Gray's Lake, and then Nick and I will talk about his weekend and movies and stuff like that. And we got a bunch to do today. David, if you're listening later, candidate Jeb Bush will be on. Do you have any questions you want me to ask him?
Am I on?
Yeah, you want me to ask Jeb Bush anything in particular?
Yeah, where's he get his hair done?
All right, making a note of that. Hair. Jeb Bush, hair. Got it. How about Hamp? You have any questions for Hamp?
Oh, What needs to change the most, offense or defense?
All right, offense or defense?
I would switch those questions.
Offense or defense for Jeb?
To Jeb. And then
yeah,
hair
for Hamp. Yeah. Hamp does have great hair.
He does.
Yeah, terrific hair.
That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, and Dr. Kevin Most will be on in, about an hour or so. Dr. Kevin Most will be on. Do you have anything medically ailing you, David?
Yeah, I had a heart attack on Veterans Day, which wasn't fair because I'm a veteran.
Wait a minute, your first one or you've had multiples?
This is the first one, totally unexpected.
Oh, I bet you just walked it off. You're a tough guy.
No, my health warden would not let me.
Oh, your health warden. All right, great. Well, God bless you, man. Stay healthy.
I will.
Yeah, all right. And you're feeling all right now? You sound better.
Yeah, I feel really great. I'm getting pampered like you couldn't believe. So, you know, life is good.
Well, play that up and take care of yourself.
I will.
I'm going to put you on hold. They're going to give you all the prizes for being the first caller. Thanks for doing that.
Thank you.
All right, 547. Mary's here with your traffic trouble spots. And Mary, jump in on that cyber shopping thing.
Oh, sorry, I'm looking for a comforter.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, I meant when you're not doing your actual job.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Here's your traffic first on 720 WGN. Oh, yeah, here you go. Breaking out the traditional Christmas hits. Yeah. We used to open presents to this. I'd shake it a little bit, toss one to Granny. It took her too long to open it. I'd just move on over and rip that paper off for her. You know what I'm saying?
Fly Christmas.
Totally fly Christmas. 551. I saw Spotlight this weekend. Yeah. You weren't lying.
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, is that a good movie?
Oh, man.
So good. And Mark Ruffalo, who's kind of a goofball in general, like you sit down and talk with him. I've been lucky to interview just about everybody. So, you know.
I've never interviewed him.
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
But he is, he's really in his head.
Oh, yeah.
He's an actor.
Yeah.
But everything I see him in, I love.
He's great.
Even bad movies.
He's great. You know, I remember the very first time I saw Ruffalo, I think a lot of people was the first time, was You Can Count on Me, this movie where he played kind of the loser brother of Laura Linney. And it was back in 2000. And right from the very first moment I saw the guy on screen, I was like, man,
really
this
good.
Guy is good.
Really good.
Everybody in Spotlight is good, though.
Yeah, Michael Keaton's tremendous.
Yeah.
The guy that plays Ben Bradley Jr., one of the great character actors, one of those other guy, that guy faces.
Yeah.
Go, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
You never know his name.
And everybody does such an amazing job, from Tucci to Liev Schreiber. It's a tremendous, Rachel McAdams, man.
It's great.
You know.
It's great.
Never did I think when I saw Rachel McAdams, you know, I loved her in Mean Girls. She's great. And she's a lot of fun in other movies. And that movie where she marries the astronaut, because it's the astronaut's wife. Yeah. The movie called The Astronaut's Wife. No, not The Astronaut's Wife. The Time Traveler's Wife.
Ah, that's it. The Astronaut's Wife is a different movie.
Different movie, yeah.
But in that movie, an astronaut does marry a woman who becomes his wife. Therefore, the title, The Astronaut's Wife.
Would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was like a few movies recently. And her performance on the second season of True Detective.
Yeah.
I never knew she had that in her. I never knew that she could have the depth that
she got
had.
Chops, yeah.
She's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty girl gets it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I highly recommend Spotlight.
Absolutely.
Of the stuff that was out this weekend, anything make a dent? How about Creed?
Let me just explain something to you.
Yeah.
Creed is absolutely one of the best movies of the year.
No kidding.
Absolutely.
Wow. I would not expect that.
Blown away by how much I loved it. I went in going, all right, you know, Creed, they're passing the torch, little Rocky movie.
Well, am I right about this? I mean, this doesn't ruin it for anybody. Stallone underplays it? Subtle?
Here's what mark the tape. We don't use tapes anymore. What is this, 1980? hey, Maximus.
Digitize this,
Maximus. I'm telling you.
Oscar?
Sylvester Stallone is going to win the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor.
Ah, that'd be great.
And we just mentioned Mark Ruffalo, who is going to be his competition.
That would be great.
You know, and or Michael Keaton, anybody from Spotlight. But I'm telling you, Stallone is going to win the Academy Award.
I've heard it's tremendous.
Why is he the supporting actor?
Because the lead is Michael B. Jordan, who you had.
Oh, he is the lead then.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's, I cried three times. Anybody?
Yeah, but you can't, look, dude, let's be honest.
I know. I cry at Hallmark commercials.
No, you cry when you leave the show.
That's true.
You cry every morning at 6.
I'll be crying on the way home. People will be asking me on the train, what's wrong with you?
Crying now.
Nothing, man. I just had to leave, Steve.
I'm crying now.
But Michael B. Jordan's great.
He's great in it. Everybody's great in it. And it here's the thing. Clearly, Ryan Coogler, who directed this movie.
Known for what?
Fruitvale Station is the only other movie the guy made. But the technical brilliance of this movie is also amazing. The first boxing match in this movie, the first fight scene in the movie, I believe might be the best choreographed boxing scene ever in the history of movies. And it's all done in one take. I've never seen anything like it. The entire fight scene,
right.
The entire boxing match, one take.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
I don't either, and I've seen the movie.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. Because if you go back and you watch the original Rocky, the story is phenomenal. The moments that it'll take you back to are great. But you see what you now know is Sylvester Stallone and whoever he's up against in the first three or four Rockies, where the punches are sped up. You can see the head snaps back. You can see all these errors in the choreography.
If you take 57 punches in round one to the head,
yeah,
you're not going to come back and win the fight.
No,
these are very realistic. But like in terms of the way that first boxing scene is shot, I've never seen anything like it. It's astounding. And you mentioned the first movie.
But how do they do a one take? Multiple camera?
One camera moving.
It's like
around.
A crane shot or just a free? Now the cameras are like the size of your palm, right?
This was probably done, absolutely done with a Steadicam. And just moving around the ring. And I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like it. The first boxing match in the movie, and the last one's great too. The big fight at the end is great too.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You mentioned the first movie. Anyone who loves Rocky One, and I don't know anybody who doesn't like Rocky.
Well, if you don't like Rocky One, you should leave the country.
I can understand you not liking any of the other ones. That's totally fine.
Uh-huh.
Except for Rocky Balboa, which I think is a very sweet and very good film. But the last one. But if you love Rocky, the original Rocky, Creed is an unapologetic, beautiful love letter to it.
Yeah.
There are wonderful little moments that take you back to the first movie. The score, I want to mention the score, one of the best scores of the year. And there are moments in the movie where you can hear little notes from the original score.
Oh, that's cool.
Just in the background, you know it's there. And, you know, there is a moment when there's a very recognizable, you know, part of the score. And when it finally comes in, forget it. You're gone.
Yeah,
you're absolutely gone. Goosebumps.
Yeah.
The scene in the original Rocky where he... is out running, he's getting ready, and he's running, and people start joining him as he's running down. It's a very iconic scene.
Yeah.
They top it in this movie. I won't give away what they do, but they top it to the point where I was in tears.
They also go Pavlov's dogs on these movies, which is great, because when they hit the ring bell is a scene ender at the right time in the original, and of course it's the fight starter that works too.
Yeah. I'm telling you, all the way across the board,
this is
without question... The biggest surprise for me all year. I've been surprised by movies that I didn't think were that good.
Yeah,
this thing, seriously, this is one of the best movies of the year. And it made $42 million over the weekend. And this is going to be a case where this is a movie. I'm guaranteeing this right now. This movie is going to have legs. This movie came in third this week. I will not be surprised if it's number one at the box office next week.
Cool.
Because the word of mouth on this thing is going to be so strong.
Well, the buzz, you can sense the buzz building.
It's unbelievable.
And now you've got something that could live for two or three or four more films.
No question about it.
But you don't want to get too far down the road. You don't want to get Creed loses the house.
No.
You know, Creed.
No. If this
Creed,
is the...
Creed selling refis on TV. What's the Henry Winkler thing that he does? Reverse mortgages,
yeah, reverse
Creed
mortgages,
for reverse
yeah.
mortgages, yeah.
But if this is the last that we ever hear from the Creed story, it's fine because it comes full circle as the end of Rocky's story,
right?
You know, in that regard, and the final scene in the movie,
great.
I mean, just like there wasn't a dry eye in the house, and this is the first time. And this, when I saw it Friday. It was packed. The theater was completely packed.
Oh, that's good.
Everybody had a great time, and at the end. This is the first time that I've heard this in a very... I can't remember the last time. An eruption of applause.
Yeah, it's cool.
At the end of the movie. It is great. And for anybody who loves the original Rocky, and that means everybody who has ears who is listening to this, anybody who loves the original Rocky, this is absolutely required viewing.
That's
great. Is a great, great movie.
And I mentioned Spotlight's great. Did you see any crap?
Well, Victor Frankenstein.
Not great.
Which wasn't crap. It was okay. But let me just give you the numbers on this one, okay? This is the lowest. And I love this little fact. Eric Childress, I want to credit Eric Childress because he does a box office summary every week.
Right.
He pulled this little fact out. This is 20th Century Fox's lowest weekend opening since 1987. Now, would you like to know what movie?
Well, give me a hint. What was the genre?
Crap.
I didn't know that was a recognized film genre.
All right, let me just put it to you this way. It's the directorial debut of Emilio Estevez.
Oh, was it the Garbage Man movie with his brother? What was it?
Wisdom.
No idea.
Remember Wisdom? It was him, and at the time, Demi Moore was his lady.
Not a clue.
And they played like modern-day bank robbers?
Nope.
Yeah. Victor Frankenstein made less money than Wisdom.
So like $8? It was like one guy?
It made... I have it.
Finally, I think movies still cost $8?
Did it make more than the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie?
Yes, it did.
Debacle.
No, it didn't actually make more than that.
See?
No. So Victor Frankenstein made $4.2 million.
Oh, and that's in wide release, right?
In wide release. Now, Wisdom was in 700 theaters. This was in 2,700 theaters. So it's the biggest. It's the biggest bomb wide release in
2,700 theaters, $4 million?
$4.2 million.
That's literally, that's $22.50 a theater.
My parents and I went to see it, okay? My parents and I went to see it.
I don't remember this movie at all. Look at poor
Demi
Moore.
I don't remember it either.
In her jean jacket with her Colt 44.
Wisdom is
completely unbelievable.
Is notorious. Notorious is one of the worst movies ever made. And it almost ended Emilio Estevez's career.
Well, what did?
Men at Work. I like the way you refer to it. Was it that garbage can movie?
It was a garbage movie with his brother.
The garbage movie with his brother. Yeah, that's any number of movies, by the way.
By the way, was that a metaphor for the rest of Charlie's career or what?
He was in Scary Movie 5.
You're right.
Come on.
All right, what are you doing this week on the show?
Well, you know what? Can I plug my movie?
Sure.
Real quick. I'm doing Jerry Lewis's Nutty Professor tomorrow night.
Oh, good.
One of my favorite movies of all time, Jerry Lewis. Good. And it's our 50th movie and our 4th anniversary tomorrow.
Kev, you should go to this. Have you ever seen The Nutty Professor?
Not the original, no.
See, of course, you've seen the Eddie Murphy version.
Yeah, you should see the original.
All right. What time's it at?
8.
Yeah, I can't go.
Thank you, buddy.
You know, he's a jerk. Maximus is a jerk.
No, he's not a jerk. He's tired.
You tired, Maximus?
I'm tired.
There's a fine line between the two.
Okay.
Would you like me to do this or just do this? All right, fine. This is former Florida Governor Jeb Bush's favorite song. Loves this song. Big, big fan of it. And he'll be on later, or at least he's scheduled to appear.
Wow.
He's canceled several times, but he's scheduled to appear. Dr. Kevin Most later. And Pat Brady normally is on here talking politics as a former prosecutor. He'll be on talking about some of the legal angles of the Laquan McDonald mess. So that's coming up at 7 o'clock or so. Good morning, Paul Conrad.
Good morning.
I didn't have a chance to tell you last week. I'm thankful for you.
Well, listen, thank you very much. I was thinking about you on Thanksgiving Day.
Should have been.
I know I rolled right out of bed and didn't give any kind of proper greetings, but happy Thanksgiving to you, a few days belated.
Now, how many people were at the Conrad Estate?
I believe it was 29.
Wow.
Yep. A lot of them, I have no idea who they were.
Who did the cooking?
We ordered some turkeys.
Yeah, same here.
And then other people, and some stuffing and stuff like that. And then some other people brought some stuff. And, you pass around a bag of Cheetos and
you're good to go.
A can of beer for everyone, and boom, you got a party.
I made the mistake of undersizing the turkey.
Oh.
So we had 11 people, right. And I go to pick up the turkey, and I'm going, well, this turkey is...
Right, and when you say turkey, you just mean like a bag of turkey, like a small bag.
I went to Jewel. Right. I just picked up some of that sandwich meat.
Yeah. Passing around, everyone gets one slice.
No, I got the turkey from a place where they make turkey. Uh-huh. And so you get the turkey, and you're going, I know this is supposed to be for 11 people, but this looks a little small.
Yeah.
And then I cut that bad boy up, and there were about 4 ounces of turkey for 11 people. So,
well, that's the way you do it, right? Like, if they want more,
right,
they need to bring it themselves.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, it did. It cut down the arguments about leftovers.
Right.
So there's not a whole lot of that going on.
I still have so much turkey at my house right now, I'd be more than glad to give you like 10 pounds of it.
Well, I'll tell you, here's the situation. I missized the turkey so badly that nobody took a nap.
Oh,
nobody
wow.
was even tired.
So then you got to sit and you're all staring at each other.
Yeah, there was no tryptophan kicking.
No, man, no. That's a real drag.
So, that's but I'm glad nice. You had a good Thanksgiving. Now,
I did, yes, thank you.
Now, we're into the holiday season.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, same thing here at the tower, the headquarters, the epicenter of the Larry Wirt building.
Yeah.
But as we go forward into the holiday season, I'm taking a couple of weeks off.
Yeah,
and
that's the way you got to do it.
You're rarely on.
That's right.
So will you be on at all in the month of December?
The month of December, I will be on, I think, for the first 2 weeks.
First 2 weeks.
And here's what I've been
And then trying. You're off to San Diego?
No, I think we're going to go to Michigan.
Okay.
And I really believe in getting away from...
Larry and Robin?
Yeah, the people.
Yeah,
you know?
Getting away from Larry and Robin.
Right.
Yeah.
First of all, the amount of hairspray...
On Larry
alone
yeah.
is enough. I think my lungs are like half the size that they used to be.
I don't doubt that at all.
So, yeah, I'm going to get away a lot in December.
And so then, what, are they just busting extra Ponces when you're out of
town?
Yeah,
yeah,
how
there's
do they do
a
it?
Whole tribe of them, and they're driving around in buses across the city.
Yeah.
And they drive in front of the TV stations, and, you know, they've got those flashing lights. If a flashing light goes on, bus pulls over, one of the Ponces jump out, they run in, they anchor the newscast. And then they jump back on. Meanwhile, yeah, they're driving 2, 5, 7, Fox 9. They go all over the city.
Now, here's the thing.
Some radio stations also.
I'm always embarrassed because I never know the difference between Harpo and Zeppo.
Right.
And
I
Ponces.
Get Tito and Zeppo confused myself.
Yeah,
so
see, it's trouble.
It's very difficult to keep them all straight. But Zeppo is filling in this morning for Potash.
Oh, that's tremendous. Yeah. That's tremendous.
Yeah, so they are all over the place.
Now, Lourdes and Aaron McElroy.
Yeah, they're both Ponces also.
I did not know that.
Yeah, using different names.
Wow.
Yeah.
But will they be working a lot because Robin's
sure
in the
so.
Tank again?
She's here today
yeah.
in the flesh, but I don't know that her mind is here, to be honest with you.
Right, it's checked out.
Been missing for
so time. We just want to be honest with people.
All right, yeah.
The month of December, broadcasters phone it in. Yeah.
Probably Monday of last week was my last legitimate day where I tried.
Right. And the forecast you're doing today is just whatever
totally
got left there
up.
Over
I
the weekend.
I watched Tracy Butler about 20 minutes ago, and I just try to remember what she said, and I just repeat it because I don't give a rip. It's Christmas. So, you know,
let's
you're
sing.
On your own.
All right, we got to go because you got a new TV, but let's sing a little bit of that. I don't give a rip. It's Christmas.
Yeah. I don't give a rip. It's Christmas.
I think that sums up how beautiful the season can be.
For me.
That's Paul Conrad.
I'm watching Tracy Butler and phoning it in from the Christmas tree.
He's got a pretty good voice.
Well, even his whole family were singers. The Von Conrads.
Oh, the Von Conrads.
Yeah, the Von Conrads. They were tremendous singers. I don't give a rip. It's Christmas. Soon to be a classic. It's 6:22 in the morning. University of Chicago shut down today because of an FBI warning of a potential, a threat. It's not a potential threat. It's an actual threat of some sort of gun-related incident on the quad. Is it the quad?
Yeah, on the quad. Gun violence. It was a specific threat of gun violence to the quad area at a specific time this morning.
But isn't like some nut called in, this is the FBI, so they took it very seriously.
They did take it. They're taking everything, as they always do, but especially now in light of Paris and Mali and everything that's going on, they're taking it extremely seriously. So they've just canceled all classes, all activities.
Out of the hospital, outside of the hospital, nothing else going
on? Yeah, exactly. So obviously the hospital, the emergency center is open as well, too. They'll have extra security on hand. Just as a precaution.
And this is obviously a threat to be taken seriously, but one of the reasons we have so much of this now is because we have so much access.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the primary reason. Because previously, you wouldn't have the addictive nature of it where one nut hears another nut and decides they're going to do their nutty thing.
Right.
Now, because of social media and because of the internet, everybody's got access. And every crackpot has a chance to make themselves famous for 5 minutes. And this appears to be another one of these cases. So the FBI is active. And I'm sure, by the way, you have to believe that this is just extreme caution.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unlikely that anything bad will happen at the University of Chicago today. But why take the chance?
Absolutely. Also, the lab schools are closed and the libraries as well. So they're just asking everybody to stay in. Comes at a busy time, too, because there's final exams next week. This is the last week of full classes.
Speaking of security, massive, massive security challenges for the Pope's security entourage in the Central African Republic, one of the most dangerous countries in the world that the Pope insisted on going to. There's a story that floated this weekend, which the little that we know about this Pope certainly seems like it could be true, where he said to the cockpit and the pilot in particular of the plane, if he didn't want to land in the Central American or African Republic, give him a parachute because he was going. Because it's that dangerous, where there's concerns about the plane being shot down. There's a religious war that's been going on there for quite some time, and no stable government. But the Pope insisted on being there, and that's who this Pope is. And then in France, in Paris, in particular, probably outside of the Olympics, the greatest security challenge in the world, because 3 weeks after Paris's 9/11. You've got a collection of the largest countries' world leaders, including President Obama,
mm-hmm. in France,
there for the climate change conference, and just a massive security undertaking. There were some protests yesterday related to this that were shut. The protests are not being allowed while this conference is going on. Mm-hmm. The president will not be there for the full. President Obama will not be there for the full time, but he's there for now, and there'll obviously be some discussions of how to handle ISIS and how to handle Syria. In other news. Again, Pat Brady will be on after 7. We'll talk about the legal aspects of the Laquan McDonald story. The Chicago Tribune's editorial page did a nice job yesterday with this in summing up a good portion of the questions. I even have more questions than were listed there. But I'm not ready to accuse anybody of anything, and I'm not ready to just loosely throw around the word cover-up. But there's some very important questions that need to be asked about this, and more importantly, questions that need to be answered by the city, by the mayor, by the police commissioner, by Anita Alvarez, because this looks really, really bad.
It really does.
And I'm not just talking about the video. The video speaks for itself. And Van Dyke, based on what we saw in that video, should go away for the rest of his life. But beyond the video, with the video not being made available, the payoff in April, right around the time of the mayor's reelection,
mm-hmm.
How Anita Alvarez handled the indictment for murder.
Right. Why it took 13 months. I mean, I know she said she was being thorough.
And then said, well, we're doing it now because of the security, because we're afraid the city could go up in flames. The fear that I had as well.
Yeah.
By the way, I came down on the two freelance reporters who were a part of this, and I owe them an apology. Now, when I said, well, this is some grab by publicity for them as well, my concern was that I thought we could have another Ferguson here. And there ought to be a way for that video to be screened without it being just released to the public.
Mm-hmm.
As it turns out, that video needed to be seen and the protests were peaceful. Though I cannot tell you, and I'd be happy to talk to Father Flager or to the Reverend Jackson or anybody else about this. I don't understand how stopping people shopping on Michigan Avenue does anything.
I don't get that either. I really don't. I understand you want your message to be heard. But you know what? Chicago teachers, the teachers union had a rally in Grand Park. It was peaceful. It was great.
Well,
it was
going from
loud.
City Hall. People are still
right.
going to cover it.
Or the police station. They're having a candlelight vigil tonight in front of the police station. But I agree with you. I don't understand how stopping traffic on Michigan Avenue or stopping people shopping on North Michigan Avenue is going to change anything.
And the fact that, you know, I've said this a million times, and I'm not remotely kidding when I say this. If you want to make sure people don't get behind your cause, block traffic.
Oh, yeah.
Block traffic or block them from getting into a store where they're just trying to do whatever they're trying to do in the middle of their day. It doesn't mean they approve of a kid being murdered in the street by a cop. Mm-hmm. It just means they're going shopping.
Yeah.
And shutting down the money on Michigan Avenue, I don't get it. I don't. And by the way, I don't think anybody in that protest could explain how it helps. It just seemed like a good idea.
And also, too, I mean, you're right. Most of the protests were peaceful. There was one on Wednesday night, though, where some of the protesters, actually, I should say punks, because they really weren't protesting. They were trying to take the lights off of the Christmas tree. That has nothing to do with trying to make change from within the police department or the city.
Yeah, and by the way, the tax dollars that are generated by the money that's spent on Michigan Avenue goes to pay for city services that you want more of for these kids that need more services in schools and everywhere else. So it's not that hard to link the two together, that there's a positive to people spending money on Michigan Avenue, and the negative is your perception of the police department and the stuff that obviously needs to be fixed.
So, I watched the coverage in Phoenix because it got a lot of coverage.
Well, got all that coverage nationally.
Phoenix, and the question that was asked by several people, were there out-of-town protesters that came in like they did in Ferguson and other places where we've seen demonstrations?
Didn't appear to be the case.
Basically Chicago, or were they?
Yeah, it didn't appear to be the case.
I think there were some who were from maybe.
But none of the hardcore troublemakers that showed up in Ferguson and Baltimore.
Right. Yeah.
At 6:29, let's shift gears here. Mary, did you find a cyber deal you'd like to recommend?
Yes, actually. Christopher & Banks, which is one of my favorite clothing stores, is having a big Cyber Monday thing. 50% off entire site. Free jewelry set if you spend $75 or more. Free shipping, of course, all day long.
Christopher & Banks. And Andrea, do you have a cyber suggestion?
Well, it was just popped up on my screen, Steve.
Yeah,
you know, I can't help that this stuff
sure,
pops up. I'm probably going to go with the cashmere sweater for $39.
And where is that?
That's at Carson's.
So Carson's.
And they always have coupons at Carson's.
Yeah.
Always.
They do have you. And free shipping, too.
And a texter from the 773 said, can Andre repeat the names of the two price comparison apps were mentioned at 520 this morning?
Oh, yeah. One was Parabus, and the other was Camel, Camel, Camel.
Yes. I was just on Camel, Camel, Camel.
How do you spell Camel? C-A-M-E-L?
Normal Camel spelling.
Yeah, three times. But Parabus, this is a great app. I just found out about this over the weekend. It's P-A-R-I-B-U-S.
Oh, you sent that to me.
Parabus,
This is where they pay you back if you overspent on something.
This is great, yeah. So it goes into effect if you bought something last week and they find something today, they will get your money back. They take, I think, 5% or 6%, but still, hey, it's worth it. You know, you get something back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a Discover Card website kind of cash kickback situation.
Right, and it also can link other accounts like Amazon. Why do you laugh?
I just was trying to work the word situation.
We're trying to be of service here to the people.
All right, more random shopping that wouldn't normally occur. 6:31, that's coming up. But Doc Most on the way after the big story, which is next on 720 WGN.
Woke up after midnight, both my neck and arms were sore. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call. The WGN hotline. I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Once again, it'll be stuck in your head all day. It's the Dr. Most theme song. Good morning, Dr. Most. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Cochran. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing fine. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. Hope everybody had a nice Thanksgiving. Did the entire Most clan get together?
Yes, we all got together. You know, the nice thing is no one ended up in the emergency room, and that's usually just a simple goal for us.
Right. Well, I'm sure anytime anybody has an ache or pain, they call you. I know I do.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of things that come up during the Thanksgiving holiday, and that is you get together with people who you love, people who you know you're supposed to love, and people who are there out of obligation. But in any case, people you don't see all the time or maybe don't see that much during the year, maybe haven't seen since last Thanksgiving, and maybe you notice something. Maybe you notice that Grandpa's not hearing the way he did or that somebody's vision is a little off. I mean, the five senses matter, Doc.
They really do. And, you know, you make a great point. You know, take a chance here at the holidays, not a chance, take an opportunity here at the holidays to check in with those people and look for little subtle changes, because sometimes people don't notice, you know, like you said, you know, that they lose a little hearing. They don't notice that, hey, turn that TV up. Hey, turn that TV up. Well, you know, those are the things that we want to start to notice, and those are the things we want to start to encourage people to get looked up, because our senses are very important to us.
Let's talk about hearing. What do we do?
Well, it's interesting. You know, hearing has a wide spectrum, obviously, and as we age, our hearing will diminish. So seniors, you know, people who say, hey, turn the TV up, or you get in their car and the radio's blaring, those are the people that actually need hearing aids. And a hearing aid is simply an amplifier. So it's something that's placed in the ear, and it actually projects the volume louder. But one thing I will say is, you know, you go on Google hearing aids, and you know, there's numerous companies that you can buy them over the counter. And my biggest recommendation is go to the professional. Go to an ear, nose, and throat doctor who has an audiologist who will actually do the proper fitting for the hearing aid.
Right, because it's too big a deal. It's not something that, you know, you might get a great deal on one for $29.95. Well, you could blast your eardrum, or you could actually not be able to hear any better, toss it out, and nothing's going to change.
Exactly. You know, exactly it. You throw it away, it doesn't fit in your ear, it doesn't work right. But the audiologist will find out, you know, here's where it's comfortable for you, here's where it's uncomfortable for you. They'll help you set that. And then they also know, as you come in for checkups, is your hearing worsening? So they will know that.
They still do the same test we did in elementary school where you'd put the headphones on, the giant 75-pound headphones, and you'd hear that little beep.
Yep. Beep. That's exactly it, where you go in the little booth and you... So you don't have to go in the booth anymore. For the most part, the headphones alone will work.
You raise your hand,
exactly,
remember?
Right. Yeah, you raise your hand, yep. And whichever side you heard it on, exactly.
Let's do traffic. We'll come back. We'll talk about the other senses. And then, Doc, you're going to be shocked to hear this. I actually have a complaint of my own.
Really?
As I continue to fall apart physically. It's 647. Mary's back with your traffic trouble spots. What's happening now? Back with Dr. Kevin Most, brought to you by Northwestern Medicine Impact every day. All right, Doc, so did you want to say anything else about hearing before I move on?
Yeah, I do. You know, just one quick thing about hearing, too. You know, we have other types of hearing loss, and you probably have, hopefully, someone, you've seen somebody that's had a cochlear implant and understand what that is, you know. And if you really want to feel good, go to YouTube and watch infant cochlear implant, where a child who hasn't heard ever now has a cochlear implant, and it's turned on for the first time.
No, that's amazing.
Make it cry. It is, yeah. So we know that there are individuals that the amplifier is not going to work because they have damage to the fine hairs in the cochlea. So we need to change how we do that, and we do it with a simple surgery, but a surgery that allows people who can't hear to hear, and it's pretty amazing.
Let's talk about seeing, or the lack of being able to see the way you once did. If you start to lose your vision, look, nobody wants to go to the doctor. It's nothing personal, Doc. We just don't want to do it.
You're right. Absolutely.
So if you have somebody you love, or if it's you that's not seeing as well, it's nothing to be ignored, right?
It's not. And again, this is getting back to seniors. You know, hearing, when they start to lose their hearing, they start to get socially isolated. They don't want to go out because they can't participate in conversations because they can't hear things. So getting that will change that. Making sure they stay on top of their vision will also keep them safe as far as driving and doing things like that. So we want to make sure that as our vision starts to fade, we make sure that we get our vision checked. Another thing everyone can do is take a good vitamin that is going to make sure that you have the vitamins that are responsible for your vision health, which is vitamin A, vitamin C, and lutein. And Dave, lutein is very high in kale, so you are set. You don't even need to take the additional supplement where many people
awesome.
Do.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Dave, I'm over here. Probably didn't notice me.
Great.
For
great.
Another reason. But the I've seen, you know, you walk through the vitamin aisle at Walgreens, you'll see eye vitamins or vitamins where lutein is the big stamp on the label. Do you need something special, or is there like a one-a-day version of something that would work?
Absolutely. There is a one-a-day. I take one from Bausch & Lomb, actually, you know, so I know that they've done the science behind it, and it's something that everyone should at least consider. And if it's not every day, then, you know, at least a couple a week.
And the Bausch & Lomb thing, is that eye specific? In other words, if you're already taking a vitamin, you probably shouldn't double up, should you?
Well, you can, if you know, for some of the vitamins, because if you look at a multivitamin, a lot of them aren't going to have lutein in it. So you need to make sure that you have one that does. So that's why I take both the eye vitamin and a multivitamin.
So as long as your stomach can handle it, it's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's some colorblind information we're not going to have time to get to you with, but let's talk about one other thing that's important. Not the colorblindness isn't, but when it comes to losing your taste, or if folks sat around Thanksgiving and goes, you need more salt on this or whatever, how do you know when it's not just age-specific stuff and it's something they ought to be concerned about?
Yeah, the thing is that we hate is when something changes dramatically. So you go from, boy, I can taste everything, to, boy, I can't taste anything anymore. Now, these can sometimes be very simple things. Can be a sinus infection, can be allergies, can be a nasal polyp. But often it's going to be those. Sometimes, though, it can be something more serious. And it's kind of interesting. The majority of our food's flavor comes from our sense of smell, not from our tongue. Our tongue can tell us if something's salty or sweet or sour, but actually the taste of food comes up from our sense of smell. So we want to make sure that you have something that can be taken care of quickly, whether it's with antibiotics with a sinus infection, sometimes allergy medicine, sometimes even light surgery to remove those polyps, and you'll get that taste back.
The taste thing, if it, you get like a tinny taste in your mouth or something that's super funky, get to a doctor right away.
Yeah, it's actually a good idea to get to a doctor and, you know, get to your primary care doctor who can check you for some things, but then you're going to end up at an ear, nose, and throat doctor to have a full evaluation.
All right, let's get to Steve's complaint of the week.
Yeah.
My back usually flares up about once a year. It's almost always golf-related. It's low right. It was diagnosed previously as a bulging disc. You know, thousands and thousands of people listening right now go through the same thing. But for the first time, it's an off-season sort of thing, and for the past month, even just sitting in a chair here in the studio, you get up and it grabs, and you know everybody knows what back pain like is like. It's really it's aggravating. It's tough. So it's definitely been an issue. It was an issue all weekend long. For people that have a bulging disc or don't know if they do, but they got that low right or low left pain, what do you do?
So one of the big things, and you kind of hit it on the head when you said that, you know, it happens when you're seated for a long period of time. Sitting is one of the worst positions we can get on for our back. Sitting puts more pressure on our discs than standing does, than walking does, than anything does. So really, anybody that has low back pain, you'll often see that they want to get up and stand, and they want to move around a little bit, and that's because it's taking some of that pressure off of that. The things we start to get concerned is when that pain goes down your leg, or you start to feel any numbness, or you can't walk on your tiptoes, or you can't walk on your heels. Those are issues where we know that the disc now is bulging to a point where it's affecting the nerve, motor, and sensory, as well as discomfort. What can you do for it? One of the biggest things is when you're playing a commercial, don't sit there. Get up and move around.
Right.
People now at work, we have workstations that actually allow the workstation to be moved up so you can stand while you're working. And actually, there's some with a light treadmill below it so that you can even walk a little bit while you're working. And for you, again, anti-inflammatories try to take down some of that swelling. If it gets too bad, then actually get in to, you know, Dr. Ambler and discuss, you know, the possibility of needing a steroid pack to take down the inflammation quicker.
What are you a fan at all of tennis ball therapy? Because it used to work when you take a tennis ball, and Andre used to play tennis, take a tennis ball and you sit on a tennis ball. I got a right side soreness. I shove it under my right cheek and sitting on it, it seems to release that nerve situation. Is that just in my head or does that actually work?
No, it actually works. You know, it's the Costanza thing with the wallet from Seinfeld. You know, there's two muscles. There's two tiny little muscles where that sciatic nerve goes through. And sometimes sitting on that ball or changing your position is going to allow those muscles to relax a little bit and take some of that pressure. So often that will help with the pain going down the leg. It's not going to help too much with the disc in the back. That's more when it's a sciatic pain where it's tight because it's going through that tiny little muscle called the piriformis.
You like massage? You like chiro? Any of those or just depend on the individual?
No, I like massage. I like low back massage, you know, and stretching that. And one of the biggest things people should know is if you really have bad back, you don't need to strengthen your back. You really need to strengthen your core.
Right.
So I would work on core exercises because that's going to be the stabilizer for the back and will often, you know, when I had my bad back, I got two steroid injections, but then it was working on core and, you know, I dodged surgery and, you know, that's the goal. The goal is to dodge surgery.
What about TENS units? You like TENS units?
TENS units are okay. Again, it's a little muscle. It activates muscles and it allows some of the people that have bad spasms and have the discomfort there will sometimes relieve it. It's kind of hit and miss with people because it's difficult to say whether the pain is due to spasm or whether it's due to positioning core or disc. So there's a subset of people that the TENS unit will work for.
And exercise is good.
Exercise is actually really good, and it's not like you have to go out and run or do anything like that. You know, some of the core exercises, yoga is great for it. So some of the core exercises you can do in your yard, you can do in your house. You don't have to be at a health club to do those.
Back yoga. All right. Well, that's all great information. And, of course, I didn't bring it up for me. I brought it up for the others.
Yes. Yes. You have a friend who has back pain.
Oh, totally. it's Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. Cool billboards, by the way, popping up all over town from you guys.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah. And Dr. Kevin Most, thanks for the information.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
See you. Bye. And Doc and I will return in 2 weeks because I will not be here next Monday.
Yeah, and I hope your friend's back feels better by then.
Me too. This guy named Steve, older guy, bald.
Heard of him.
It's 7 o'clock. Pat Brady will join us in a little bit. We're not talking politics today. We're talking the law and tapping into his knowledge as a former prosecutor, though every time we're together I feel like he's judging me. It's 7 o'clock. Our news next on 720 WGN.
Of justice must address tape suppression and cover up.
The mayor has made it very clear that he has my back. And if people peel away the onion on what's happening right now in the policing world, you're going to find a police department that's doing an exceptional job.
Back to more Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
See, protesters on Black Friday, the Reverend Jackson, who, by the way, got shouted down by a bunch of kids when he was speaking. So we got a changing of the guard there. And, of course, Superintendent McCarthy. Pat Brady joins me now. We're not talking politics today. We're talking the law. Give me your chops again legally.
As an assistant Cook County State's attorney and a federal prosecutor for, 11 years or so.
All right.
And then did investigations. Big companies trying to get out of trouble.
You support the police. I support the police more than anybody, I think, that has a microphone in front of them. But there's a ton of questions that this police department has to answer for here and a ton of questions the city has to answer for. And I'm not interested in accusing anybody or creating a big conspiracy or following up on those theories, but they are creating their own until they actually answer these, and that includes Anita Alvarez. So I think what I want to do with you is, once we get beyond the traffic, is just run through some of these questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions. I think all three, a lot of questions need to be answered.
Right. And the Chicago Tribune, by the way, did a nice piece yesterday, the op-ed page, the editorial there, laid out a lot of these questions. And then the other piece of this, of course, is the protesters and the protests that are scheduled to continue for 16 days. And we talked about this last hour. My hope is that the protesters move their efforts to City Hall and they move them in other places. Stopping commerce on Michigan Avenue, frankly, is not going to do anything other than hurt you. You'll get attention everywhere. So that's just a point of perspective. Quick retelling of the facts here. Laquan McDonald is shot and killed on the street in October of 2014. In April of 2014, the city agrees to pay Laquan McDonald's family $5 million. Frankly, it's a separate discussion, but the fact that his mother and sister and others got $5 million after the kid was in foster care since he was five is just a punctuation of tragedy on that entire kid's life. But that's not the point of the discussion. The point of the discussion are these unanswered questions, and Pat Brady joins me now. So why would it take 13 months to get a murder indictment when that video was out there?
It's a great unanswered question. The short answer is it shouldn't. I mean, the longest this should have taken is a month, and I understand that the state's attorney, Anita Alvarez, has said there are complicating factors when you're dealing with a police officer, which there are. But the reality is to put this investigation together that night, interview the witnesses, interview everybody on the scene, gather the evidence, go over and get the tapes, and then get the autopsy and the toxicology reports, go to the grand jury, you're ready to go. It should not take more than 2 or 3 weeks at the most, maybe a month, not 13. Now, again, her explanation was because of the Garrity case and some other things, complexities with indicting a Chicago or any police officer, it delayed it for this amount of time. And she also said, there's been an ongoing federal investigation, but I never heard her say that by charging this guy at this time or that time, it would interfere with the federal investigation. So a lot of unanswered questions. But the elephant in the room that probably a lot of people, including the Tribune, are discussing, the timing of this around the mayoral election and who actually made the decision to slow walk this or not charge this right away.
Yeah, and the autopsy that you mentioned, the autopsy on top of the video, which you have to assume that Anita Alvarez in her office saw.
She said she saw it after 2 weeks.
All right.
You're done right there with your investigation.
There's nothing else you need, right? No. Do you have to wait for internal affairs or any of the police department investigation?
Well, it separates out. It goes to the review board.
That's basically, that's just professional courtesy, right? You don't legally have to
wait. The prosecutor. You can do what you need to do. And you can, however, you could have gotten it done much, much quicker. So is it, the question is, and I'm not going to accuse her of anything, but is it ineptitude or is it some kind of political cover-up to, you know, keep this from blowing up right prior to a mayoral election.
There was also this question of there is a Burger King that was nearby where they have security cameras that supposedly had some shot of the scene of the shooting. And afterwards, the police went to see the video. Heard different reports about this, but the Burger King manager testified to a grand jury that they took the equipment, and when the video was returned, there was a Nixon gap. There
was 86 minutes.
86 minutes of the video were gone. Now, Anita Alvarez said that they did forensic testing on it, and there was no apparent tampering. How is that possible?
Well, a couple things. First and foremost, that guy, the manager of the Burger King, said he went to the federal grand jury recently, along with two evidence technicians or evidence people.
And he's testifying under oath. Why would he want to get involved?
Well, because he was subpoenaed. The point is, the bigger point is, it appears to me by that the feds are actually looking at a broader than a civil rights case. I think they might be looking into the cover-up. I think you can discern that from him testifying and what he said when he was in there, including the tech guys from Burger King. The 86-minute gap in the tape is inexplicable, particularly given what the Burger King guy said. And another point that hasn't really been brought up, and I think I'm right on this, I would assume it violates evidentiary protocol for the police officers to go in there, review the tape, and the way they handle it. It should be, go get the tape, grab it, mark it, take it down to the evidence tech, and image it, then look at it. So it's preserved by viewing it.
It's a separate department. You know, the cops on the street don't look at that, right?
Right. Also, it's a legal chain of custody issue. If you want to admit that at trial, you're going to have to prove the chain of custody. Now we've got, allegedly, a couple of police officers looking at this thing, and now there's allegations that 86, or there is 86 minutes missing, but allegations that maybe something got erased.
The superintendent said the no audio on any of the tapes. By the way, there are five dash cam audio videos, and four of the five, the vehicles were parked in a way where they didn't have the same sort of shot of the scene of the murder. My word. But no audio on any of them. And Superintendent McCarthy said, well, it could be technical difficulties or more training. That's a hell of a coincidence.
I talked to a very high-ranking former assistant state's attorney who told me that is just flat-out bizarre. And remember how this case, he's been charged with murder. And one of the things he's going to try to establish in order to get himself acquitted is that he reasonably believed he could use deadly force. Those tapes could be very relevant to what he thought and what he saw, what he heard. I mean, it is like Adam 12 or a cop show. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And, you know, this guy's out stabbing people. This guy's hyped up on PCP, whatever. That might help him. But now we don't know what's on those tapes, and we don't know why there are no audio tapes, which is very bizarre, according to my...
I'm not excusing Van Dyke. Not now, not later, none of it. And I wasn't there. The video does speak for itself. But the video that we have seen, thankfully, stops at the moment of the first shot. There is a point, and people who will sit in jury at this trial, where Laquan McDonald turns towards the officers. Now, I'm not saying that means shoot him and kill him, or certainly shoot him that many times. That's ridiculous. But that seems to be something that may be used in favor of Van Dyke in that he was so afraid that this kid with this knife was turning towards him that he thought he had to take him out.
Sure, and that'll be his case. Without lawful justification is what he's going to, or with lawful justification is what he's going to have to establish, and that is relevant. But
that's not lunging. And the Pat Camden story that was placed out there, and this goes to Pat Camden's credibility as well. Does Pat Camden come to these sites and he is told whatever the cops tell him, and then he just repeats that? Is this now how most of the television news in particular that you see is disseminated from the police department? That's a fair question.
Well, that raises another big issue. Somebody's lying. Somebody's lying about the lunging. Somebody is lying. I'm not saying it's Cameron. I'm not saying it's the police, but somebody is lying. That's why it raises all these questions I think need to be further reviewed.
But, you know, when we go out, when we interview him, because he's normally, you know, the first go-to person to get a soundbite from, if you will, he's always out there, and he has, you know, his standard line. The officer feared for his life. The suspect lunged toward him. You know, so that's not out of the ordinary for him to give his standard line.
Right, but then what happens is, which I think was Pat's point just now, is some officer had to tell Pat Camden that story.
Mm-hmm.
The officer feared for his life, and the kid lunged at him.
Right.
So if somebody's lying.
Well, you know, if you do watch the initial television reports on this, you just think, oh boy, this is another hyped-up kid with a knife, and this was completely justified shooting. It was... So that we bought the company line at first.
Now there is, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of basic police work is there's a lot of paperwork, and a lot of paperwork means when an officer discharges his weapon, There's going to be a lot of paperwork that needs to be filed as to why it happened, what the results were, what the circumstances were, and there's a whole process that goes with that. In addition to that, there's a process that goes with the people that went to Burger King, and secondarily, shooing away witnesses without getting anybody's contact information, which many witnesses say happened.
Take that with a grain of salt.
Oh, that doesn't mean much?
In my experience, take that with a grain of salt. It's like a CTA bus. Everybody jumps on after the accident.
Okay, so that's a lesser deal.
I read that, and I'm like, I'm not sure about that. But it still raises it. It needs to be looked into.
But all the police officers on the scene, by way of the paperwork point, need to be able to account for their actions that night.
Sure.
Not just the shooter. So everybody needs to account for their actions, which means all of their stories have to match. That's an easy thing to do if everybody's telling the truth.
Right, and very difficult to do if everybody's lying. That's why if everybody – that's but the, all of that being said, the tape blows it all away. The videotape blows it all away. And why was this thing held for so long? Why was this case settled for $5 million the week after the election with nobody reviewing the tape? Why was the tape ordered then to be sealed?
Yeah, well, let's go to that piece for a second. So I'm not the first to bring this up, and I won't be the last. The mayor's reelection was this past April. Yes. And here's a little bit of politics involved with this. The mayor looked like he had the election wrapped up. However, as is always the case in Chicago, with a population of a third that's black, a third that's Hispanic, a third that's white, you need the black vote. Is it impossible to think that if this video were released, that the mayor could lose the black vote and therefore Chuy Garcia could end up winning and therefore that would lead to this alleged conspiracy that, again, I'm not willing to throw out, but that's the discussion that's going on.
Sure. I mean, that's the logical conclusion that everybody has made. I just think it all needs to be investigated. That would be...
That's how you get the answers to the questions, do the investigation. And by the way, turn it over to an independent source.
Exactly. That would be a conspiracy that would be pretty tough to pull off. But... there certainly are a lot of indicators or questions that need to be answered.
And if I'm the mayor, who it doesn't take a lot to offend the mayor. If I'm the mayor, I would never be more offended than to have all of this talk out there right now, the argument we just laid out that's been percolating for a week now. And I would do everything I can to shut that down.
Well, he didn't help himself at the press conference or thereafter saying that I never saw the tape.
Yeah, how's that?
Even though they settled it for $5 million, it just doesn't make any sense. And the more you
especially a mayor that has such a control over the city
and control over the news cycle.
Right. The U.S. attorney investigation that you mentioned, how does that play out?
Well, there's
typically, there's
an ongoing federal investigation. They typically, in these kind of cases, they don't investigate murder, they investigate civil rights violations. Remember back in the 90s when the cops that were beating up Rodney King in Los Angeles, they lost that case at the state level, and the feds came in and filed a civil rights action. That's what I would assume the feds are looking at. But given what the Burger King manager said, they may be looking at a broader case. We don't know. The feds are always very tight-lipped. Zach Farden is a guy of impeccable intellect and integrity. I have full faith in what he's doing. But these other questions, a lot of people are clamoring, we want to know now. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I don't know where our attorney general is. But you would think that the attorney general of the state of Illinois would have an interest in finding out what happened here.
Yeah, the attorney general's role in this. Does the attorney general and the state's attorney operate separately or in unison?
They're separate. They're separate.
But they should be willing to work together.
Yeah.
And the attorney general, the highest law level, whatever the term appropriately should be, in the state, certainly can come in and not bigfoot it, but come in and make a point here.
Well, she could do an independent investigation versus hiring someone, spend a bunch of money to bring somebody else in. I don't even know where the statutory authority is to do that. Some people are saying Loretta Lynch. Well, Zach Farden is Loretta Lynch, the attorney general. He's doing a federal investigation. If you want an independent investigation, I'm not sure exactly how it would look, but the facts certainly call for it.
Well, see, that brings up an interesting point because the Justice Department ended up going into Missouri and into St. Louis in particular and Ferguson. Is there a chance that the Justice Department would be asked to come and look at the Chicago Police Department?
You never know. I mean, Eric Holder himself actually went, the attorney general at the time, actually went to Missouri, maybe. But I would guess that they feel pretty confident in a guy like Zach Farden that he's actually going to get to the federal interest. And remember, murder cases, police misconduct cases that are turned into murder are typically local cases, the state's attorney or the DA, right, whatever you want to call it. The feds have different jurisdiction, kind of a different mandate. But in this case, obviously, they're involved.
And I'm working through these questions. One that absolutely has to be answered going forward is the lack of discipline in regards to the volume of complaints that come down against the Chicago Police Department. Chicago Tribune and other sources have reported similar numbers. Between 2011 and 2015, 28,500 citizen complaints against Chicago police officers, 97% resulted in no discipline whatsoever. And Van Dyke, who is now sitting in jail for the murder of this kid, had 18 complaints brought against him, was not disciplined in any of them. Now, you have been around police work for a long time. I wouldn't surprise me if the majority of complaints were no discipline. But 97%? Come on. I mean, that math doesn't work.
I'm very pro-police, and I believe 99.9% of the police are actually doing a good job, and I believe there are a lot of goofballs
totally
who like
agree.
To make these complaints. I don't know the difference in a percentage or two, but in this case, clearly this guy fell through the cracks. And I did read in the review board, you can't consider the police board that does these kind of reviews, you can't consider previous bad conduct in making your...
in other words, you could have 75 in a row, but you can't look at those 75. You can only judge the latest one.
Now, that board catches a lot of grief, but I looked at the composition of it. I mean, there's some people on there that aren't typically law and order types. A lot of former public defenders, appellate defenders, professor types. So it strikes me as unusual. Those types of that kind of ideology would be trying to help the police out, but there's certainly been a lot of complaints about the board.
And again, just common sense tells you that's not even possible.
Common sense and the whole thing, if you look at the length of time it took this, the Burger King thing, the inconsistent statements, the settlement, all this stuff adds up to something that really needs to be looked at further and not just what we got last week, when I watched Anita's press conference, I'm like, you're kidding me. Because of United States versus Garrity, you didn't charge this guy for 13 months? It doesn't make any sense.
So you have three major departments that affect your life every day, whether you live or work in Chicago or Cook County or the state of Illinois. And that is the state's attorney, the mayor, and the superintendent. And the superintendent said, if you look beyond and peel back the onion, I think were his words, this police department's doing a great job. Yeah, the vast majority of the police department's doing a great job. But you got to own the fact that this was not one rogue cop. This appears to be, from all logical viewpoints, a monumental screw-up that needs to be addressed on every level.
Sure, but let's take it to the next step, too. I mean, they fought tooth and nail to keep the city, fought tooth and nail to keep this video from anybody ever seeing it.
Right.
And had this muckraker guy, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, not filed these FOIA requests, nobody would have seen it because they were going to seal it up after they settled.
Jamie Calvin and Brandon Smith, and that goes back to the $5 million question. So those are the questions, and I don't think any of them are unfair, and I think those are the questions all of us deserve to get answers to. So as we go forward, we'll continue to push for that, as will others in town. But thanks for the legal perspective on it.
Anytime. Thanks.
Back with a big story next on 720 WGN and Hamps on the radio.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Sponsored by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Well, got to say, Hamp, even though we predicted a close win and it turned out to be, it was still a pleasant surprise.
Yes, sir. It's a great way to get started here on a Monday morning, and it's kind of talking a little bit about, you know, what did go down up in Green Bay. And I hate to say I told you so, so I'll say, what did I say? I remember back in August, and I'm going to try to get Mr. Cat to pull this up on tape. I said, you know, I understand that beating Green Bay in the opener with the new staff, but I said that game up in Green Bay, Thanksgiving night, that I think we could win that one. And
I remember you saying that.
Yeah, I you know, it's a Stranger Things, but I got to tell you, it was a great performance, top to bottom, and you know, we can dissect it however you want to do it. But I just want to say one thing. You know, tonight the Cleveland Browns will play on television, and it wasn't long ago there was a lot of Bear fans clamoring to see Josh McCown at quarterback.
And, yep.
And I don't think anybody's upset about the quarterback we have today.
No, he's had an exceptional season. I'll tell you, Hap, that seminal moment for me on Thanksgiving night was the last drive by the Packers, because I don't care how big a Bears fan you were, you had to have that moment where you go, oh, here we go. Well, you got him the whole game. We've held him down, and Aaron Rodgers is going to come down and stab us in the heart with a big wheel of Gouda. And look what happened. The Bears pulled it off. Great little slap that pass away moment right at the end, and it's over, and they beat the Packers in Green Bay. That, to me, was a real growth moment for that defense.
Absolutely, and when you look at it, again, as you say, hey, here's Aaron Rodgers, the most feared quarterback in all of football. With the ball, they go, I think it's 9-play, 71-yard drive, right down. And they got, you know, first and goal at the 8. And yet, the defense bows up, and they do, you know, Tracy Porter, you know, played an amazing game, But a guy that nobody really knows his name, Chris Prozinski,
yeah,
made maybe two or three of the biggest plays of the football game. And again, those guys, they weren't nowhere around a year ago, especially Prozinski. We picked him up 5 weeks ago off the street. So you got to tip the cap to the players, but more importantly, the coaches have got these kids not only buying in, but arranging the deck chairs pretty well, where just think when we get some players that are difference makers and special, man, this could be pretty good.
And that's the thing I was going to ask you, Hamp, and I do remember you saying that the Bears could win this game Thanksgiving night, but what happens when these guys aren't just grabbing guys off the NFL scrap heap, with all due respect to those guys, and getting guys in place that they have selected and they have brought in specifically to play a long-term role with this franchise?
Well, two things. Number one, and if you think about it, all through this roster, the highest paid offensive lineman, he's not playing. That's Jermon Bushrod.
Right.
Highest paid defensive lineman, the two highest paid defensive linemen going into the season was Jared Allen and Mike Ratliff, Jeremiah Ratliff. Mm-hmm. They're both gone. Wherever you look, it's based on performance, not pay or potential. And I like that. But you're exactly right. When, you know, you start hitting on some of the draft picks, you got to give Eddie Goldman a lot of kudos. Here's where I hate to say it, but where would we be without him? He's played an awful lot of snaps for a guy that's 320 pounds, and he's held up pretty well. But more importantly, a lot of guys that a lot of folks didn't figure to be a part of this, you know, Mike Anderson, Willie Young, these guys are making plays. And more importantly, they're putting us in a position where over the last five games, now think about this. Now we saw New England lose to this Denver Bronco team last night. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty good. Well, out of the five teams we played the last 5 weeks, they're the only ones that scored two touchdowns against this defense. Everybody else, one. And that's truly a pretty amazing statistic.
You look going forward, I don't want to get too far ahead here. Yeah, Green Bay playing at Detroit.
What, are you planning a vacation or something?
No. But this Thursday, you got the Packers playing the Lions. You look at what's ahead for the Bears over the final five games. They get San Francisco at home this week. They get Washington at home. Redskins are tied for the division lead at 5-6. But at 5-6, the Bears are actually, and who would have thought this, Hamp, when they were 0-3 and they had that miserable game in Seattle without Jay Cutler, but they really do have a legit shot to get in the mix for a wild card spot.
Absolutely. Now, these next two teams, the 49ers and the Washington Redskins, the 49ers had a great effort to lose to Arizona yesterday, and the Washington Redskins won against the Giants. Well, they're a little bit different on the road. So those two teams, I hate to say beatable, but you kind of figure the way especially our defense is playing, you know, those are doable things. As you said, the Packers and the Vikings play once again, but in 3 weeks we've got to go to Minnesota, and that could be the one that tells us what we need to know. Because, as you said, ending at home against Tampa Bay and Detroit, you got to think, hey, at one point, obviously, this looked like the lost season. You know, we were Ray Milland and
absolutely
lost weekend here. But more importantly, after going 0-3, to get back to where they are right now, and, you know, I don't like to beat a dead horse, but, you know, John Fox has cost them how many of the three losses that we've experienced?
Well, two of the three. I think you can pin.
You can make a case. You kick a field goal and you're 6-5 and pretty much in the driver's seat. But we'll see what happens. The bottom line is the team, you know, is able to focus, and I like our chances against Blaine Gabbert at quarterback.
So we'll break that down later in the week and move forward. But I think what most people are wondering this morning is how was Hamp's Thanksgiving and how many turkeys gave their lives for your enjoyment?
A small crop. But, you know, I got to tell you, we had pregame, and then we watched the game in studio.
Right.
And we did the post game, and I got to be honest. Kaz was on his best behavior. Normally, he gets that tryptophan funk where he's not in a good mood. But man, he was in a great mood after this this big win we had against Green Bay.
And I love OB, but how do you tell when he's in a good mood?
Oh, he's, you know, I got to tell you, he's seen a lot of Bear and Packer games, and 100 of them at least. Think about it.
Sure.
So you wonder where he puts this victory. Oh, it's in the top three for sure. Because, and again, it's all we've talked about. You know, again, I don't know if we had one guy on our defense that could have started for the Packers defense. This was a monumental effort, and it's a touchstone moment where this team can realize, hey, we've accomplished this, but come on, let's keep pushing. You either get better or you get worse. You don't stay the same. Let's hope they continue to improve.
Last word is just a football fan kind of thing. And I know Bart Starr came before him, yeah, and Brett Favre came after him. Yeah. But if anybody watching that game didn't get a little choked up or just goosebumpy in seeing two of the all-time greats embrace there at Lambeau, where the ghost of Lombardi's floating around going, what the hell's going on down there? It was a great, great moment, and it makes you appreciate how great football is.
I'm really happy that you had that feeling. It was a special night. And it was the last time there was a game played at Lambeau Field on Thanksgiving was 1923.
How about that?
Hey, and that year, and I thought it was, when I looked up these little nuggets, I couldn't believe it. That was the year they released the Ten Commandments, the original one, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, the first year of Yankee Stadium. But the most interesting factoid that I found, and get this, it was the year they discovered insulin. And
wow.
Jay Cutler, our quarterback, who's diabetic, obviously,
right. Insulin means a little something to him.
Just think about I just thought that was an amazing fact. So you're exactly right. I played against some teams where Bart Starr was a quarterback. Obviously, he was before my time. Of course, we know what Brett Favre was. He was, you know, the original Maverick. He was unbelievable. But I kind of, in some, you know, bellicose way, take great joy in the fact that our wonderful, young, relentless Bears went up there and kind of rained on the parade.
Yeah, totally agree. And you know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about the night that Gale Sayers and Butkus went in. October of, I think, 95.
94.
I was in the stands with about 14 other people as we sat it out.
Worst ever.
And it's the worst weather I've ever seen.
Yeah.
With your trash bag on?
Yeah, exactly. And feeling good about it. So
it was Halloween night.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. All right, Apple.
I've talked to Butkus about that in years since, and, you know, he shakes his head and he goes, that's my luck. You finally get your jersey retired, and everybody's running for the exits. It was a bad day.
Well, but you know what's funny about that? And, Hap, I think you were there as well. But the thing is, everybody stayed until the moment the kickoff in the third, and the only people left were the players, and I think some of those guys left.
Yeah, I think most of our defensive players left, too. I think he was a player of the year that night in the NFL. So, yeah, you're exactly right. It was a little bit of turnabouts, fair play, and it was very inclement weather. I got to tell you that. But you got to say, when the conditions were at the worst, the Bears actually came through. And remember this. I don't know if you and I will see another game where anyone holds the Packers scoreless in the second half of a home game.
This doesn't happen.
Thing. Yeah.
It does not happen.
I don't realize it, but hey, Vic Fangio and that defense held Aaron Rodgers out of the end zone.
Pretty amazing.
It was amazing.
See you at the end of the week. That's the great Dan Hampton. The Steve Cochran Show continues. But
now, back to more Steve Cochran.
WGN Chicago.
808, we're a couple of months away from Iowa, and we want to have every candidate have an opportunity to talk to you, not just for the people who listen in Iowa every day, but for the people of Chicago and the people all over the country that listen. And Governor Jeb Bush joins us now. You can follow him on all forms of social media at Jeb Bush. And good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Nice to talk to you. You know, I've had the pleasure of meeting and spending a little bit of time with both of your parents, and I think they're both terrific folks, and I wonder how they're doing health-wise.
They are both a little frail, given the fact they're 91 and 90, but right. They're in good spirits, and they're in good shape.
Good to hear. And if you don't mind, I have no interest in discussing candidate Trump. I think we spend too much time asking you and other candidates what's going on with Trump when I'd prefer you have an opportunity to tell the voters what you're going to do.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that. Let's have a conversation.
Let's start with ISIS. ISIS, of course, starts out as what appears to be an offshoot of Al-Qaeda and is now blown up to be the biggest threat on the planet. If you're in the White House, what do you do that's different?
Well, I laid out what I would do 3 months ago at the Reagan Library, long before the Paris shooting, and it would be first to recognize that for what it is, this is a threat, a global threat. This is Islamic terrorism. These are radicals that want to destroy Western civilization, and we should. They've declared war on us, and we should have a strategy to take them out, not to contain them. And that would require American leadership by garnering the support of the Arab nations and European nations, principally. To support a local force, the remnants of the Syrian Free Army, where American leadership is not just in the air, but on the ground as well. I don't think we could do this without American leadership, without embedding our troops in Iraq, with the Iraqi military, with directly supporting the Kurds in Iraq, and re-engaging with the Sunni tribal leaders in Iraq that was successful, that partnership was successful in bringing about the end of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And as it relates to Syria, we need safe zones. The refugee issue, which is a huge tragedy for literally 4 million people uprooted from in Syria.
Sure, it's a nightmare.
In a country of 23 million, we need to have safe zones there and a no-fly zone where we're serious about dealing both with Assad and ISIS.
Can we do it without... I'm sorry, can we do it without Russia's help, and should we have Russia's help, and how do you get there with Putin?
You can't do it with Russia's help unless they abandon their support of Assad and change their relationship with Iran. We have a dual threat in Syria, the most brutal regime in the world that has killed over 200,000 innocent people, supported by two countries in the world, Iran and Russia. And I don't see how we can expect Russia to change its feathers at this point. If they could, fantastic, but I don't see it. I don't see it happening. I think we have to deal with dealing with Assad in a dramatically different way and make sure that we deal with Russia from strength, not weakness. The idea that we wouldn't talk to Russia is ludicrous in my mind.
Right.
But at the same time, dealing with them in such a position of weakness only emboldens Putin.
One of the main concerns that Putin seems to have is the security of their large naval base there. Is there a way to secure that? In other words, that he wants something in exchange for cooperation. And if we could do it without him, great, but his cooperation would help. Or are you just seeing this as competing agendas and we need to peacefully get along but not try to militarily do something together?
Yeah, unless Russia changes its path, which right now is to prop up the Assad regime. I mean, look, they're not hitting ISIS in the air. They're hitting the remnants of the Syria Free Army, which we're supporting. That should be a pretty clear signal of what their strategic interests are. The fact that they have a strong naval presence there is because we pulled back. And re-engaging, I think, is the first step for creating an environment where the rest of the Arab world would feel compelled to join up. They don't think that we have their back. We don't think we're serious about dealing with both Assad and ISIS. You're not going to get any support. And we can't do this alone.
When you have spent time in Iowa, regardless of what people say, that the Bush campaign is focused on New Hampshire, blah, blah, blah. Look, you want everybody. You're running for president. And
yeah, exactly.
The people that are listening in Iowa have had a chance to meet you and spend time with you. What are their concerns? What are they talking to you about?
The same as in every part of the country. I'd say the deficit and the debt, and now this concern about national security are the two pillars. How can we create a growing economy and deal with our structural budget deficits? And how do we create a more secure America? And that's the issue. I mean, and agriculture issues are more important perhaps in Iowa than they are in New Hampshire. New Hampshire has issues related to drug abuse that are serious, and so there are specific local issues. But the two big issues are, how do we create a growing economy to deal with our budget deficit and growing income for Americans? And how do we create a more secure America?
Andrea, say hi to the governor.
Governor, good morning. Wanted to ask you, you know, as long as you're talking about issues on a local level, more hitting close to home, I want to ask you about race relations. And on a national level, obviously hitting very close to home in Chicago here over the weekend, there seems to be a lack of trust between many residents and the police department. I want to know what you think should be done on a national level. Is there more funding? Should there be more dialogue on race relations?
There should be more dialogue. I don't know. Funding isn't necessarily the issue here. There's quite a bit of federal support for local law enforcement. The idea of cameras could be helpful. I don't think it ought to be mandated how they use them from Washington. We're a bottom-up country, and I think the best approaches, the places that are most successful, the ones where trust is the first priority each and every day. Today we have a situation where law enforcement officers are literally worried about doing their jobs, being engaged in community policing. And they're withdrawing, and it's going to create insecurity rather than security in crime-ridden neighborhoods. So I think the president can play a role in talking in a way that tries to bring people together. But ultimately, these are local issues that need to be worked out each and every day at the local level.
One of the frustrating things that I run into all the time from folks is the fact that the president can't work with Congress and Congress can't work with the president. And Ronald Reagan is cited often by all the Republican candidates as somebody that worked well with Tip O'Neill. Well, great. That's 30 years ago. When is the nonsense going to stop where if a Republican hears a Democrat open their mouth, it's a bad idea and vice versa? Because to me, the only way we move forward in this country is if the president finds a way to work with Congress and peacefully disagrees and comes to a mediation, a solution.
Look, it's not just Reagan and Tip O'Neill. It was my dad with Democrats. It was President Clinton with Republicans. It was my brother with Democrats. We've now reached this gridlock that is quite dangerous to our democracy. I think you start with the premise that people that don't agree with you aren't necessarily bad people or that they have bad motives. They just might be wrong, and you have a dialogue with them to try to forge consensus. There's no trust at all. I'm talking about lack of trust. This is maybe where Washington needs to focus. There's no trust at all between the parties in Washington. Even when they agree, they can't figure out a way to agree. I'll give you an example, criminal justice reform. There's a growing movement on the right to look at minimum mandatory sentences at the federal level. There's a lot of nonviolent offenders in our prisons, and President Obama agrees with that. Rather than go to Congress to try to forge consensus to move forward with a change in the law, he's basically using the clemency process to release people and not engage in a way that would be meaningful. At least at a minimum, when there's agreement, there ought to be a pause. No one pushes the pause button and get on with it. You start with the premise that people aren't bad people because they disagree with you. You can forge consensus. And it's got to be the first priority of the next president. It's not a sign of weakness to actually get things done. Governors know how to do this, by and large. This is what governors do. They have to, there's a requirement to balance the budget. There's a requirement. You know, we have, in our case, 60 days to get the legislature in and out. So there's a lot of talent and skill from outside of Washington that can be brought to bear to Washington, I think, to begin to fix the culture.
Yeah, you've got a wonderful family. You've got a nice life. You've got a great legacy of when you were governor of Florida. Why in God's name do you want this job?
Because I think we can fix the things that are broken in Washington to create high sustained economic growth and to restore America's leadership in the world. And others may be able to do this, but I think I have the skill sets to make it happen. And it's an incredible privilege to be running. I do it with a lot of joy and a lot of excitement. Today I'm off to Iowa, and I'm going to spend 2.5 days there, then on to Minnesota, then to Washington, D.C. for for a big speech and then heading back home. So I'm gone 6 days a week. I love it. I love giving people some sense that things can get better. I love learning from people in these town hall meetings that I do. It's a true blessing for me.
I don't know how your family does it, because you certainly can't sit down at Thanksgiving and have a conversation about politics, because your dad and your brother have had the job. I would want their advice, but then by the same token, maybe you don't want to hear it.
Well, I wasn't with them for Thanksgiving. I was with them the weekend before, and my dad's not really in the advice business anymore. But my brother is, and I'll take all the advice I can get from him. He's the last Republican to have won. He won twice, and he knows a lot more about how to do this than anybody that's running right now. So I do seek out his advice, and he gives good advice.
Got another debate coming up, and this doesn't appear to be your favorite thing to do. What do you do to make it?
Come on, Steve.
Now, you and I both know it's not your favorite thing to do. Having said that, the last debate, you seem to find your path a little more, whatever that means. What do you want to do in the next one? Well, I mean, obviously leave the impression you want to leave, but how does it play out differently? Or do you just take it as it goes at night with proper preparation?
That's exactly the way to do it. It's not really a debate when you have 10 or 12 people on the stage. It's more of a performance. And I'm training myself to say what I want to say, not necessarily respond to whatever the question is. And so the message, I think, the mission in this particular case is to answer the question, but then speak about what's on my mind and in my heart about the aspirations of people. Tell stories, talk about why I can beat Hillary Clinton, which I think is ultimately going to be one of the big deciders as we get closer to the primaries and caucuses. We can talk all we want, but in order to serve and solve problems, we have to win. And I think I have the record and the ability to beat Hillary Clinton.
Listen, Governor, I appreciate...
Against her with an untested, you know, person that doesn't have a record. That's just, I think they'll scrape the bark off of whoever that is.
Scrape the bark off. Here's a phrase I haven't heard in a while. Listen, I know how busy you are, and you know what a big deal this radio station is throughout the Midwest, so I hope we can keep these conversations going, headed towards Iowa and beyond. But I really appreciate your time this morning.
You bet. I love it. Take care. I'll see you. Hope to see you maybe in the studio, too.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. That's Governor Jeb Bush from Florida. Jeb2016.com is the website for the candidate. And as I said, you know, I still would love to have Cruz on, even though that conversation might not be as friendly. And the other candidates of, we've had Rand Paul on. We had on Governor Walker before he stepped out. We've had on a bunch of folks.
Santorum.
Santorum before. Is he still in?
No. I think
he's out? Okay. But of the mainline guys, we've gone through most of them. Governor Christie's scheduled to appear and all of it. I just think it's important for people to hear it. Not just, again, for the people that listen in Iowa every day, but for people in general. It's 820 Marietta traffic, and then Dean's coming up. What's going on with the cars?
I saw the show on the show called Bozo. Godfield Goose and a guy named Ray. I watch it every year on Turkey Day. Represent Dean.
Dean Richards, who's still wringing out his clothes from the Thanksgiving Day parade.
We did not get rained on.
Come on.
We were dry during the entire parade route. About 5 minutes after we were finished, it started pouring raining, but the gods were smiling on Bozo and Tom Skilling.
Rained in East St. Louis all day.
You do not want to get a Tom Skilling or Bozo wet.
No,
that's
no.
That's not a good, Bozo's got hair issues. Tom, just takes a beating from the crowd when the weather, starts to turn bad.
So. Yeah, and Tom will admit this. He'd be the first to admit this. You get Tom wet, he smells funky. Yeah,
well,
I'm telling you.
Well, you know, as any of us would be.
All right, so one of the also...
Why don't you ask Jeb Bush about, smells when gets wet?
Well, you know what?
Anybody could ask political questions.
You know what? It
ISIS,
wasn't,
you know.
It wasn't one of the top agenda items.
What do you smell like when you're wet, Governor?
I'm going to go ahead and make a note of that and take it under
Next
advisement.
Next time you have one of those political guys on...
How'd you like how we ended Santorum's campaign before we even talked to him?
I did notice that.
By the way, Dean is sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center. We thank them for that. You know, we're short on time, but having said that, I do need to know about the Olsen twin wedding, because I heard a story that they had bowls on the tables with cigarettes.
That's right. That's right. Anybody could have dinner. Anybody could have drinks at a wedding, a hokey pokey, a chicken dance. They had which one was it again? Which Mary Kate Olsen?
Yes,
One of the delightful Olsen twins from the old TV show Full House. Married her longtime boyfriend. They've been together for 2-3 years now, Olivier Sarkozy. He is a banker, but also the half-brother of former French President Nicolas Sarkozy. She's 29. He's 49. They had a little private reception in New York over the weekend. Before anybody got to come into the ceremony, they had to turn over their cell phones to make sure that no pictures of the event got out. But as you say, the headline of this whole thing was, at the reception, bowls and bowls of cigarettes for everyone.
So bizarre.
So, you know, come to the wedding.
Isn't it enough that your dad, Jimmy Olsen, had to see this and the fact that you're marrying a guy as old as he is? I mean, come on.
That's not good when your dad is a cub reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper.
Adele sold so many records, they ran out of records.
They ran out of plastic. Do they still even make those anymore? I guess
they make them out of clouds now.
I guess they still, but that's very true. Everything is digital now.
That's
very true. Adele's record, her new album, has been out for only 1 week officially, and it has broken a record. It sold more than 3.3 million copies in the first week out. That broke an industry record. No other record since the year 2000 has done that. And, Steve, you'll remember this because I remember you were the regional president of the NSYNC fan club.
Yep.
They were the last ones to have a record. 2.4 million is how many they sold in the first week of their album when it first came
out.
And
I still do most of Justin Timberlake's dancing for.
Yes, you do, even when you're not dancing. Sometimes it's involuntary.
Sometimes it's just a muscle spasm.
All right. Speaking of great metropolitan newspapers, by the way, there's been this rumor all over the weekend because of Rupert Murdoch, who tweeted that there was a strong indication that the Tribune newspaper group was about to be purchased. Didn't say by whom, didn't give any more specifics other than just putting out this rumor. But that set the rumor mill aflame that the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, all the publications which are part of the Tribune Publishing Group, a completely different company now than Tribune Media.
Not part of Larry Word Enterprises.
Not the radio station and the TV stations, completely separate. But they posted a quote, the Tribune, on their website this morning that says, while there's it's not our policy to comment on rumors, given the source of this speculation and the fact that it's received considerable public attention, the company believes a statement to its employees is warranted. As our board of directors noted earlier this fall, Tribune Publishing remains committed to its strategy and transformation plan and is not engaged in discussions nor a process to sell the company. So they are saying, not true.
And when that changes at noon, you'll let us know?
Like all the double talk. Nice to see that they haven't changed that part.
I got to tell you, I just saw Rupert Murdoch in the lobby asking where the tea place is. So
where's the tea place?
So, all right, buddy. We'll talk to you later on.
All right, bye.
Now, more Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
Turn on my own microphone. 8 o'clock hour continues, sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. And great to see the lovely Colleen McGrath in studio. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Nice of you to come in. Do you work somewhere near here?
I do. Our office for Children's Oncology Service is actually in the area.
Okay, so it's not such a big deal to come over.
No, not at all.
Yeah, okay. We met Colleen through our friend Ann Johnsos, I guess, 2 years ago now?
Yeah, or, I mean, technically when I was 14.
Well, that's true. The original meeting when you were 14. But part of your own health struggles because of a cancer diagnosis has led you to your work in life.
It has.
So tell everybody the backstory.
Sure. So when I was 14 years old, I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. That was my first cancer diagnosis. And my only other experience with cancer was losing my mom to colon cancer right before my diagnosis. Really quickly into being sick, I became very defeated. The treatment was definitely worse than the disease. I lost a lot of hope, and I couldn't really see going on. So I actually asked to quit chemotherapy. And after talking to my father, we talked to my nurse and my doctor, and they had one thing in particular that they wanted me to try before we continued that conversation. and that was going to a camp on Lake Geneva, Wisconsin for kids with cancer.
And I love this story, too, because you'll remember, Andrea, that you were dead set, because you were a 14-year-old. You knew all the answers.
I did.
Were dead set against this. She told your father it's the last thing you wanted to do, right?
It's true. I did not want to go at all, and you know, my dad, being the brave soul he was trying to raise a teenager, usually gave in to anything I wanted, and that was the one time he really stood his ground with me. And he dragged me up there kicking and screaming.
And when he picked you up?
Well, I was still mad at him because he only sent me for 1 week.
You wanted to stay.
I did. It was within hours of being at One Step Camp, it was a life-changing experience. I saw cancer survivors for the first time. I saw kids that had challenges I was never going to have to face that were happy and enjoying their life. Everything that we do at our programs are things that are typically stripped from you when you are diagnosed with cancer. All of a sudden, you can't do the normal things in life that you do when you're a teenager or your child. And, you know, we have the ability to give that back to kids, which is really special. And in turn, you know, that translates throughout the year. You know, our kids go home and you have this hope and happiness and motivation throughout the year. And, you know, we now have 11 programs throughout the year.
It's so tremendous.
It's not just summer camp anymore. It's all year round.
And had you not had that experience, you certainly probably wouldn't have chosen this as a career.
No. Well, and, you know, even more seriously, I don't think I would be here if I hadn't gone to camp.
Well, that's a good point.
I was dead set on quitting chemotherapy. It was terrible.
It changed your life. It saved your life.
It truly saved my life. You know, we, in a sense, have a treatment, I feel like, that they don't have in the hospitals. You know, we can treat the spirit. And when you treat spirit, then you want to fight
really
the disease.
Great. It's really great. My friend Bob Pierce, the son of Billy Pierce,
yes,
and everybody at Chicago Baseball Cancer Charities, huge supporters of One Step.
Yes, they were actually just at our flight gala, and we were able to honor them this year, which was really special.
Yeah, and what CBCC does every year is great, too, because they kick a bunch of money your way, which is a big deal because you sponsor kids in. And I told you this. I was lucky enough to play with a bunch of kids who've done camp. And they were all terrible golfers, by the way, and I reminded them every time they hit a shot. Chicago Baseball Cancer Charity's Facebook page is a great way to go and help you guys through what they do.
Definitely.
So,
and another you know, thing we're talking about right now is with Giving Tuesday being tomorrow is
right,
another great way to support us.
Specifically how?
So if you donate now through the end of the year, and
yep,
obviously tomorrow for Giving Tuesday, the first $25,000 that is raised will be matched by the Ellen Marks Cancer Foundation.
How about that?
Colleen, I have to ask you, you've kind of become a role model. What do you say to younger kids who come up to you and look at you kind of in this new role? You seem to embrace it. You really do.
You know, gosh, that's hard. I think, you know, I've never really felt that way. Every time I have the opportunity to be with these kids, I want them to find, you know, the hope that that they can have all year, and they can be proud of being a cancer survivor. And, you know, they can learn that, you know, anything that might have changed in their life due to their diagnosis, we have, you know, all these programs and things we can do throughout the year so that they can still, you know, learn to maybe live their life a little differently, but really incredibly still.
Yeah, and the emotional piece of this is such a big deal, right? I mean, the depression is very real. You don't have to be an adult or somebody who develops cancer later in life. The depression part that hits you at 14 years old, that's as real as it gets.
It's really true. You know, if you're already dealing with either being a kid or a teenager and all those typical, you know, mood swings and
sure,
emotions you're going through, and you throw cancer on top of it and your world's turned upside down. We had a camper this summer see something really special that stuck with me. His name's Juan, and he said when he was diagnosed with cancer, it became all about survival. And when he went to camp, it became about living.
Oh, what a cool thing to say.
Isn't that, like, that
from
stuck
a kid
with me, right?
It's wow. Awesome.
Yeah, this was his first year with our programs, and he's been to family camp and the Utah ski trip. And
so
he's
great.
Doing everything. It's really cool.
The hereditary piece that your family has had to deal with is devastating, but I think you are a living warning signal to people that if you have hereditary markers in your family, don't take them lightly and get checked regularly, right?
It's very true. And, you know, we learned that they're making, you know, huge strides every day. And, you know, something we didn't know years ago, we found out with my more recent diagnosis. So now I know things I can do that I couldn't do before to hopefully, you know, have a longer, healthier life.
Well, we were talking when you came in. You've had a pretty good year health-wise, right?
Yeah, I have. You know, I haven't had to do chemotherapy in quite some while. I am in remission, which is amazing because I was diagnosed at stage 4 this time.
Right.
So, you know, I got to live again. And, you know, the thing that to me is so amazing is even though I was an adult this time, you know, our one-step programs did the same thing for me that it did as a kid. You know, they were still my support system. They still, you know, got me through all the rough times. Even though I wanted to fight this time, it still wasn't easy.
Sure.
And, you know, having all those people in my life and all those things to look forward to with them really made fighting easier.
Is there a way to explain why it's such a big deal to be around people who know what you're going through? Or is it something you'd have to experience to understand it?
You know, I think... what, you know, in our case, when they go on these different programs, whether it's for the whole family or it's, you know, for the patient, being surrounded by a community of people that have been in your shoes, it just helps because in your everyday life, you feel a little alone sometimes.
Sure.
Because in a lot of these kids' cases, they're the only kid at their school that's been a cancer patient. You know, they're a little bit more, you know, unique in their day-to-day life. When they go to camp, everyone's been bald, everyone has a scar, everyone's been through treatment of some sort. And, you know, now they have a community that they can use throughout the year to help them, you know, to build that, you know, that sense of community again.
And I would think there's some power in being able to sit around with people that are near your age or about your age and to just go, the treatment sucks,
exactly.
And to not have someone else try to cheer you up over it and be able to share that experience.
Yeah.
And somebody else can look at it and you go, you're darn right, it sucks. Here's what happened to me.
Exactly, exactly. Having people that have been in your shoes, you don't feel so, I guess, you know, sometimes I would feel defensive that, you know, people didn't understand or whatever.
Well, and you probably try to protect other people's feelings too, right? Where you don't want to share the hell you've been through, you know, all the time. And now you can let it go.
Absolutely. You know, I think in a lot of cases we hear about, you know, our kids or whether it was myself or anything like that, our campers, you know, they don't want their siblings or their parents to know how scared they are, how tough it is. And a lot of times they're putting on a brave face. And to be able to be surrounded by people that have been in your shoes and, you know, don't really have to, you don't have to be brave for because they've been there and they're getting through it too.
How's your dad?
My dad passed away.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad also passed away of colon cancer when I was 19.
You are unbelievable. No. Yeah. I mean, you really are. You really are. And the fact that you're smiling and laughing and what's a great legacy to your dad?
I think so, because this was the one thing he really wanted for me. And, you know, something I think about all the time is more recently, you know, the last few years, we've started to develop programs for our families. We have a family camp. We have a brain tumor family camp. And every time I get the opportunity to be with those guys, you know, the families or attend one of the programs, it makes me think how much my dad would have loved having something like that.
Do you take time to pat yourself on the back? Do you take time to just pause and go, you know what, I'm pretty cool? Because you should.
Yeah. That's really sweet.
You really should.
That's really sweet.
Well, I'm very impressed by you. I always am when I see you. And it's great to know that health-wise that you're in a good spot. You know, and miracles happen. For you, I've got a very good friend who everybody here knows, and I'm not going to throw his name out because a lot of you know who he is, and I don't think he's ever cleared it. But anyway, stage 4 colon cancer, who is now, I think, in remission for 2 full years.
Yeah.
Stage 4. Stage 4, it's over. It's like a 3% survival rate. Miracles happen.
It's true.
So keep it up. And by the way, no pressure, but the world needs you.
That's really sweet. Thank you.
So, all right. So for Giving Tuesday in particular, what do we do?
For Giving Tuesday, it would be incredible if people could go to onestepcamp.org and they can support us. And up through the end of the year, the first $25,000 raised will be matched by the Ellen Marks Cancer Foundation.
Now, is there any special thing that we need to do tomorrow, or is it, do we hashtag it? Or
yeah, if we could use the hashtag Giving Tuesday.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that's really special on social media, you can find us at One Step Camp, is a lot of our campers, Giving Tuesday does this campaign. It's called the Unselfie.
Okay.
And you're supposed to, you know, take a picture with a sign, essentially, that's your motivation for the charity. And so a lot of campers are taking them, saying what One Step means to them. And so it's really fun if you follow us on social media to check that out and see our kids really expressing what the organization means to them. And anyone can do that. Our donors can, our volunteers can, and it's a really fun way to get people connected with us.
And hashtag Giving Tuesday is important because it earmarks those funds specifically in regards to tomorrow and okay. So we want to make sure the bonus dollars for December kick in.
Exactly.
Okay. You got a busy life.
I try.
And I appreciate you coming by. You know you're always welcome here.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the continued support.
Colleen McGrath, where do you have social media? Want to throw out a handle or anything? We want to follow you? Or is it all about the company?
I do most of our social media with the organization. So One Step Camp was definitely the best way to go.
Okay. Nice to see you, as I said, and happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
Minute before 9 on 720 WGN.
You men who long for love, you mustn't all despair. There's a secret you should know to capture the hearts of the fair. You may not have the looks, you may not have the dash, but you'll win yourself a girl if you've only got a mustache. A mustache, a mustache, if you've only got a mustache.
It is the end of Movember, which I missed this, but this is the 1 year anniversary of my goatee.
Oh, it's
been started growing it last Movember.
That looks good. Are you going to keep it?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know, Mayor, should I?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope my son shaves, though. I mean, he's got a shave today. He's got a red, bulky beard. Pretty good looking, but...
I remember the first time you saw the beard on Ross, and you were sitting next to him on a couch in my office, and you pointed at his face while looking at me and goes, "What's that?"
And since he has really trimmed it down, it looks good.
Beards are the deal now. Yeah. If you're a male between 20 and 30, Kev, you're on the outs, man. Beards are the deal.
I yeah. know. I can't grow them. Can't
have
do
you,
it.
Have you tried to do the beard thing?
Oh, you don't. Yeah, I've tried. I've let it go. It's a very disgusting neck beard. That's not even worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I could never grow the full beard. It would be spotty. Now, you take somebody like Ennett. Oh, you would yeah. think because of his cross-dressing wouldn't have much testosterone, but the guy is like an ape.
Mm-hmm. No, I
mean, Ennett has to shave every 90 minutes.
Pretty much. I had a beard for a long time. I mean, I've told you this story. When my wife and I were first dating, she had not seen me without a beard. One night, I went to the bathroom with a razor, and she was frantically calling her mother, "What if I don't like it?" But I guess it worked.
How many years ago was that?
That was probably 32 years ago.
I don't like your chances. I think it's still up for grabs.
Yeah, I think it is.
Aaron Perlett is standing by. And when I say Aaron Perlett, Kev, I mean Dr. Aaron
Perlett.
And Dr. Aaron Perlett is the head of what organization?
One of the heads of the American Mustache Institute.
Let's see how Movember went officially. Let's go to Dr. Perlett. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. How are you?
Thank you for taking time away from your office hours and your visits with patients.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm happy to be a part of your show, as always, Steve.
How did you feel this Movember went in comparison to others?
You know, other than seeing Johnny Come Latelys like Joe Buck and Carson Daly on television wearing their beards that will clearly be gone once the beard fad has left the mortal mainstream, it's been a very solid Movember. And it's been nice to see men and women of all ages, creeds and colors adopting a sexually dynamic mustached American lifestyle.
So I was thinking about you the other day because there was an old Burt Reynolds movie on us flipping through called Heat from probably late 70s, early 80s. And Burt Reynolds has got to be
78.
Okay, well, you wouldn't know, sir. But Burt Reynolds has got to be top five all time with the mustache, right?
Well, yeah, you know, he's a legend. And of course, if you go to our International Mustache Hall of Fame, which you can find at mustachehall.com, you'll of course find him there with some of the legends of the mustached American community and the global facial hair community.
Why do some mustaches, because, you know, beards are a hit and miss thing for sure. But why do some mustaches look great on guys and some mustaches on guys look bad? And I'll give you a perfect example. Matt Lauer was like everybody's favorite stud. He was the sexiest man alive, that blah, blah, blah. He loses his hair and things kind of go in the wrong direction. He grows a mustache. He looks like he's preparing for a film on Nazis. It's just not working out for him.
You know, I think it's all in perspective.
And by the way, doctor, don't hold the laughter back, doctor. If you hold the laughter back, it could physically hurt you.
Okay, well, you know, I would just say this, that it's all in perspective, Steve, and that there's typically in our community, we believe there's no such thing as a bad mustache, only bad people who do not own nor operate mustaches. Now, there is a caveat to that. You have people like young Kevin who do suffer from bare upper lip disorder and are unable to grow facial hair outside of his neck region he outlined. So we are willing to work with those people and allow them to spend time with us, but it's a matter of perspective, and I'm sorry that you happen to believe, even, you know, owner-operator of a goatee yourself, that you happen to believe there is such a bad thing as a bad mustache, because we do not. for the most part.
Really? For that? So you've looked at Matt Lauer's face and you thought, yeah, that works just because it's a mustache.
I do. I do. I think it's actually a ruggedly handsome set of facial hair, and quite frankly, I wish he would keep it.
I find it hard to believe, Doctor, I'm not questioning your integrity, but I find it hard to believe that you guys at the Mustache Institute don't have some sort of Christmas film reel where you mock bad mustaches on celebrities.
No, we have no interest in mocking our brothers and sisters out there that are willing to either adopt our lifestyle or accept mustached Americana in their life. You know, being a mustache American is not a choice. There are churches in Alabama and Mississippi that will tell you that it is a choice, but it is not. It's a part of our heritage, part of who we are, and it's within our DNA set.
There used to be a guy that worked here. What was Pete McMurray's producer's name?
Scott. Scott.
There was a guy that worked here named Scott who would enter mustache contests, and he had a handlebar mustache. You need to wax that thing and you go over. That guy, I'm pretty sure, has got to be in jail by now. What do we know about people that do handlebar mustache contests?
Now, see, again, Steve, it's a real shame that you are furthering the stereotype that people of mustached American heritage
yes.
are criminals.
Yes.
Just because Scott chose to really become a professional in our world does not in any way make him a criminal or criminalize his behavior.
Yes.
In fact, I would even though I've never seen him, I would argue that probably it enhances his sexual dynamism. But I think you're really going down a very shaky path here, Steve. I'm a little concerned.
A waxed slope, such as it were.
A waxed slope.
Yes, that's where I'm going. A slippery slope, a waxed slope. That's what you're saying if I go along the same line of thinking. In other words, I need to be more enlightened when it comes to mustaches, beards, goatees, and all forms of facial hair.
Well, I heard you speaking before you introduced me about the woman who was mentioning her son who has a ginger beard. And, it should be known that there are only 743 ginger beards left in the world.
Is that right?
They need to be cultivated and preserved. Yes, it's true. And
no, please.
They need to be cultivated and pursued. So, I think it's a question of sensitivity. And I might need to recommend to your human resources department there at WGN that you go through some sensitivity training, and perhaps your entire staff, aside from Kevin, of course, who's weak and worthless.
Right. We all agree with that. Well, before we let you go, Dr. Perlett, do you endorse any sorts of products in particular? For instance, one thing I've found as a owner-operator of my own goatee is that, a straight razor tends to work best on the borders of the goatee, but when it comes to trimming the mustache portion and keeping the fur from growing into my mouth around the lips, there's a number of products I could use. Is there one you like in particular?
I have been pretty committed to Wall's trimmers,
yes.
The Wall trimmer products.
Yeah.
Outside of that, there's a lot of great products out there, and we get to sample many of them because whether it's razors or mustache waxes like Oregon Wild Hair or Captain Fawcett's, people send these to us all the time and ask us to.
Well, they want your endorsement.
They do, because they understand where the true power vacuum lies. And so I think it would be to a degree unfair for me to do that. Although I will say that on average, a mustached American will consume 18 hamburgers from Hardee's in 1 week's time. That's on average.
Wow. That's very impressive. And that brings Kevin right back into your good graces if he would just do the thing and grow the mustache. Listen, it's always an education speaking with you. I consider myself to be enlightened, and I will try not to make easy jokes about mustache Americans when, in fact, I am one.
These are your people. You need to support your people.
Dr. Aaron Perlett, at Aaron Perlett, AaronPerlut, and the American Mustache Institute website is? I'm asking.
AmericanMustacheInstitute.org.
I thought Doctor would say it, but apparently he's leaving it up to you, Kevin, who he called worthless.
No. I actually there was a cut in the line. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
Yes, AmericanMustacheInstitute.org.
All right, Doctor, please hold the line. Thank you.
Poor Kevin's not worthless.
Well, he's got a point. I can't grow a beard.
Well, that part.
I wouldn't disagree with
you. You know what I really like about Dr. Perlett is he's an idiot.
He doesn't hold back.
Yeah, he's an idiot.
Doesn't hold back.
Get a jump on your holiday shopping. Give the gift of a great night's sleep. Get everyone on your list. You know, honestly, I've known him for I don't know how many years. And I can't get him to break. I can't get him to actually crack.
Mm-mm.
Because, you know, I know that the American Mustache Institute exists as a website. But I don't believe he eats, sleeps, and breathes it as a life and a lifestyle. He's a very funny guy. But yet, I can't get him to crack. So no. Maybe I'm the fool. Maybe there really is an American Mustache Institute where it's got ivory-covered or tiled floors. Floors? I don't know. It's got this beautiful building that houses the American Mustache Institute. I guess it would be hair-covered walls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and celebrities with mustaches go through all the time.
But he wears the doctor's coat.
Kev, I've known him forever. I still don't know if he's for real.
He's for real, Steve. And when he calls me weak and worthless, I have to take him by his word and just roll with it.
Yeah, and try to be a better man.
Exactly.
Yeah, or at least be a man.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
942. My friend Tim Benker's here, and Tim will be doing New Year's Eve as well. And you did the talk show we did on stage. August, I guess.
Yeah, we did the Steve Cochran live radio / TV, non-TV talk show.
Yeah, it was late night to me.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why we had it at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I was the announcer, and we're going to do the same thing for New Year's at the Rouse Center. That'd be a lot of fun. Now, this show is quite entertaining, informative.
Yes.
I mean, we had Jeb Bush on today. That was great.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you having the trivial and self-serving issue of my show on your show.
It's not trivial or self-serving. I think it's America's greatest issue right now.
Stupidity? Yes, it is.
The fact that you will be there at Zany's tomorrow night for a show called?
The Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid.
The Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid is a look at everything that shows up on the internet, which is idiotic, and then your very clear-headed explanation for it.
Exactly. Not just internet things, but we talk about stuff that happens in everyday life, stupid things that people say. Anyone here ever do anything or say anything stupid?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But because you realize it, you're part of the solution now. You are.
So it's like the mustache thing. I'm part of the solution because I realize I'm a fool. Is that what you'd say to me?
No, not at all.
Well, I think you're right about that.
Yeah, that's right. You're part of the cure for the stupidity because it's all over.
So this is a multi level show. We'll have some video, some pictures.
We have video, pictures, about an hour 20 of me talking. So
good.
That's your fill of stupid.
And who brought this to you and said, you know, you're stupid. I think we could marry you with stupid and we could create a show.
Well, it was me sitting in my car banging my head against the steering wheel that said, oh, my goodness, we have to address this.
Yes.
That's probably where it started. We take a look, the presidential candidates.
Yeah.
Some of the stupidity that's come out of their mouths.
And it's not just Trump.
No, it's I'm going to read.
Yeah, give me a quote.
I'm going to read one of these, and you could tell me who it was.
Yeah, go ahead.
Illegal immigrants caught voting should be stripped of their citizenship. Does anybody know who said that?
Remember this now. Illegal immigrants should be stripped of their citizenship. I have no idea. Was that Huckabee?
No, that was Dr. Ben Carson.
Is that right?
That's right. I didn't know Cracker Jack was giving away doctorate diplomas.
Give me another.
Okay, let's see who else. Actually, this was a former president.
Okay.
When I was a boy, I dreamed of being a football.
Dave, I'm going to go to you on this. When I was a boy, I dreamed of being a football. Former president, who was it? Give you a hint. It was not Millard Fillmore.
Gerald Ford.
Actually, it was Bill Clinton who said that.
Bill Clinton wanted to be a football?
He wanted to be a football. He really just didn't know what he wanted, I guess. Here's another
one. I would think he'd want to be silly putty because he likes when people feel him.
He dreamed of a lot of other things that got him in trouble. Here's what. The worst thing that a man could do is go bald. Never let yourself go bald. Who said
Come
that?
Come on. This is the current group of candidates?
Group of candidates. He said, this person said,
well, it's got to be somebody with a head of hair.
Okay.
Right? Andrea?
Cruz.
Nope. Mm. Actually, Donald Trump had the audacity to say that. Take a look at that hot mess on his head, and he said a man should never go bald. He should go bald.
It wasn't a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing with him?
No, actually. Is it ever? Or
well, that's the thing we really don't know. We don't know if Trump's entire campaign is a bit.
It definitely could be. It definitely.
How much of the show is devoted to Trump?
Actually, very, very little.
Oh, is that right?
You really just don't want to agitate people and have them walk out on you. So
you anticipate some Trump support in the crowd.
Exactly.
See, it's funny because I approach it a different way. I just pound on Trump and hope for the best.
Actually, I had a large segment on George W. Bush. And my advisors told me to get rid of it because you might lose half your audience if you do wail on somebody that
so
way.
So you have to spread the abuse.
You do have to spread the abuse. So,
what about millennials? Do you have a little millennial section in there? Because you have kids. I have kids.
That's right. I have a 24-year-old and a 13-year-old because there was a lot of good television on in the 90s. and we talk about, I call them Generation Y, W-H-Y, because I have no idea what they're doing and why they're doing it. My 24-year-old, I don't know what his face looks like because his nose was replaced by an iPhone.
Yeah.
I see nothing. Right. And they do it while they're riding their bikes. They do it while they were talking about texting while you're having sex.
Yeah.
I'm concentrating on a lot of other stuff to be able to have my thumbs doing that.
No, listen, yeah, that's no way.
That's no way.
You talk about that's multitasking. Hey. It's really gone too far. I've had people that have pointed this out to me. Like there'll be kids, and by kids I mean under 25,
mm-hmm.
walking down Michigan Avenue, pointing out to their friends pictures of buildings on Michigan Avenue. Going, wow, have you ever seen this? This is a Tribune Tower. You just passed it. It's right there. Look up.
Yeah, they could only look at it in virtual form. If it's reality, the millennials say that. They go, hey, things got real. You know, if you weren't idolizing zombies, you know, maybe everything would seem real to you.
Right, right. Zombies and vampires.
Exactly.
A big portion of the experience as well.
They love them.
Kevin, do you love when I pick on millennials?
Oh, yeah, it's always so fun.
When are we going to do another edition of Stump the Millennials?
I don't know, whenever you want.
See, Kevin's copping a tune now. Did you catch that? A little bit of tune there.
Well, one of the other participants is out of town for a while, so.
That's true. One of the people on your team?
On our team, yes.
Yes, that's very true. So we'll have to wait until she gets back?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is a piece that was on CBS Sunday Morning yesterday about this millennial thing,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty appropriate to run. I think we'll see if we can run that when we come back. We'll talk more with Tim Becker. Show again is tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, Rosemont Zany, 7:30 show. Go to Zany's website or Facebook. You can put in Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid, and me and my nonsense will show up.
Oh, good. And we love Tim, and Tim will be New Year's Eve as well at Rouse Center. Rouse Center in Crystal Lake, which is where we'll be doing the show, which is why you'll be there. It's 9:48, along with Rocky Laporte and John DeCoste and me and a cast of 1,000. 9:48, we're back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. Tim Becker and I were just talking about millennials. Here's Paula Poundstone from yesterday's CBS Sunday Morning.
Almost everyone in our country is addicted to electronics and riddled with denial. When I talk to people about it, they get defensive. They say it's not addiction, it's just something they enjoy. Really? I love to play ping pong. I love to practice the drums. I love to tap dance. But I have never even once tried to figure out how to do any one of those things while driving in such a way as that the cops couldn't see. Because I am not addicted to those activities, I just enjoy them. And there's a huge difference. Screen devices wreak havoc with the brain's frontal lobe. Diagnoses of ADHD in our children have taken a steep rise since the proliferation of screen devices. Yet, even when presented with that information, parents often won't hear of protecting their kids from the harmful effects of screen devices. Kids love them, they say. Yes, they do. And some kids would love heroin if we gave it to them. I'm told that after the initial vomiting stage, it can be a hoot.
It's Paula Poundstone. If you want to see all of it, CBS Sunday Morning, we'll link it through Twitter, at Cochrane Show. But that's what we're talking about.
We're talking about
the millennials.
What were we talking about?
We're talking about the millennials.
Oh, I had my face in my phone.
I understand.
I guess I want to be a millennial.
Hey, you want to give away tickets for tomorrow night?
Yeah, let's give away some tickets for The Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid.
Okay.
Rosemont Zany's.
Callers.
Kevin could do it.
Kevin, caller 720.
Maybe caller 7 and 8.
Caller 7 and 8. All right, okay. Caller 7 and 8 at 312-981-7200. That's telephone number 312-981-7200. I know you're a big Steve Bertrand fan.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you've always been a big Steve Bertrand fan.
I have never met the man.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I've been doing comedy for 25-plus years. Yeah. I think I'm going to become famous for doing a Steve Bertrand impression.
Uh-huh. Well, I just thought when you were doing the Steve Bertrand the night of, it was a big hit with the audience. So if I give you something to read, could you give me a little Steve Bertrand?
Well, oddly, I came with something prepared.
Oh, you have something. All right, and keep in mind, this is stylized. A lot of this is physical, which doesn't translate to radio. A lot of it's attitude.
You're making excuses for it now.
A lot of
it's
directly channeling Steve Bertrand.
For those of us who know Steve, we should close our eyes.
Yeah.
Because
right. Or to keep them open.
The sound is uncanny.
As a matter of fact, Steve's eyes are closed right now.
Yes, that's right. All right, well, so Steve, what do you have for us?
This is Steve Bertrand on WGN 720. Legalization of marijuana is one of the main topics discussed in the latest session of Congress. In a joint session last month, the subject was dropped and the meeting went to pot.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Not only is it Steve, it's Steve 10 years from now. Because you got a little bit of a tongue thing going on there. Steve, that's what you're going to sound like when you hit it.
That's
when you hit 60.
Something to look forward to.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now, I was railroad. I didn't know he was going to be listening to this.
Oh, I didn't want to tell you.
I heard you, too.
I heard the next day that you absolutely nailed it. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how do you feel now?
It's fine.
It sounds like my honeymoon. It was fine.
That's what your wife told you?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Terribly sweet.
Fine is good.
Fine. Yeah, it was fine. We'll come back and say hi to Bill and Wendy. And you've known Bill forever.
Oh, yeah, 25 plus years, yeah.
Yeah. So Bill, Wendy, and Tim Benker coming up. Stand by with more of that in just a second.
By the way, there was a scare. The Target.com website was down for Cyber Monday momentarily. It is back up.
Mm.
Okay.
Everything on the site's 15% off.
And Bill and Wendy, what are you doing today?
It's a peanut-themed show, Steve. It's the Peanuts' 50th anniversary of their Christmas special tonight, and also Peanut Tillman.
Oh, how great is that?
So if you have peanut allergies, do not listen to today's show, please.
Yeah, but gluten-free people are okay.
Oh, yeah, we want gluten-free people.
You know what? I'm going to protest.
Why?
Just the fact that you're not letting peanut-free people in.
It's just not a good day for them.
Yeah. Tomorrow's heard what happened show. To me, right?
What happened to you?
All weekend long, Jesse Jackson was standing in front of my computer. He wouldn't let me cyber order anything.
All weekend long?
All weekend long.
Why didn't you do it during the show? That's what we're going to do.
Yep.
That's a good call. And I'd like to thank also Mary and Andrea for ordering all during the show as well.
It was a sacrifice. It's a heavy burden, but
you do what you can.
Have to bear it, you know?
Wendy's back. Bill and Wendy together. See you tomorrow.